Chicago pastor Corey Brooks, LA pop musician Nigel, and another installment of The Swap Meet with Greg Flam. Now, here's your host, a man who burned his thumb lighting a smoke bomb, Justin Kaufman.
Couldn't be more embarrassing, to be honest. There's to pick up the fireworks from the Walgreens. Not allowed to have any spark on it. It's just smoke. Hit the old match. Ow! Burned my thumb. I couldn't believe it. I felt so embarrassed. I felt humiliated as an American. Especially since I live across from a park. And last night, you know, if you live across from a Chicago park, it is on. I mean, there are fireworks going in every single direction. People bringing in... I can't speak to the validity of whether or not they bought those legally, but they definitely have a legal feel. To watch all those guys just... And for me to take that little round green smoke ball and be like, I'm going to light it and watch it for 5 seconds... Give off that toxic smoke for 5 seconds. You know what I'm talking about?
Of course.
So I go for it. I do it. And I'm like, oh, I think it's working. I think it's working. Ow! I mean, it kind of burned where I'm like, if this was like 3 months ago, I would have run it underwater. But now I've read so many articles that say don't do anything. So that's how you treat a burn now. You just don't do anything.
Mm-hmm. You look at it.
You look. That's what I did. I looked at it.
Mentally make it better.
I looked at it and I cursed my family. For even buying the smoke bombs in the first place. I'm not a big fireworks guy.
Mm-mm.
And so I wasn't a big fan of that. I mean, it was fun. It was fun to do and watch the, like I said, the 5 seconds of a colorful plume. But when I burned the top of my thumb, I was like, this is everybody's fault.
Well, this should just be a lesson to keep you away from anything as you progress.
Yeah.
To stay away from any type of M80, bottle rocket.
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like either that or I get really hardcore into it. Like, you know, now I just go full on to the thing where, on July 1st, I roll into Indiana with a U-Haul and I buy $6,000 worth of fireworks to bring back to my local park. So I can entertain a couple of the parents who gingerly go to the park to watch with their 10-year-old. Yeah. You know, and then they're like, we got to get out of here.
Please don't do that.
Please don't do that. How was your 4th, Pete?
It was wonderful. Yes. Also saw some fireworks.
Yeah.
We have 2 dogs, and they hate fireworks. Yeah.
They hate fireworks?
Oh, yeah.
What? That's so interesting. That's so,
you've never heard that before?
I've never heard that story.
So on Saturday, we make our home like Bob Odenkirk's brother on Breaking Bad, or on Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
We just like seal it in so nothing can happen.
Well, you know, I know that dogs are afraid of fireworks, but I push back a little bit. You know, in the mainstream media story about dogs being right. Or maybe they're just British by heart. You know, maybe they don't like patriotism. Maybe they're more loyalists. They're Tories. You know, looked into that? You know, they act scared and whatever, but really they're just trying to rain on our patriotic parade. Did I nail it?
We'll have to do a
non-dog
deep dive
owner,
on that. Yeah.
Did I nail it? I think that might be, there might be something there. I think they're judging you. More than they're actually scared.
Well, I guess I would say that maybe for one dog, but then the other dog gets scared at the dishwasher, the wash machine, thunderstorms, loud noises, car horns. I don't know if that's any. if that's British.
That could be British too.
Yeah, that's
we have to look into that. Deeper dive. Well, it's good to be back here on the 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download. We're with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Got a great, great show lined up tonight. A terrible, terrible weekend for Chicago violence. And in particular, the fact that it was really the final 12 hours. You see that note? That the idea that for some reason, and the police are frustrated, and they're scratching their head, that the last 12 hours, last night, almost half of the shootings happened in a 12-hour period. Coming up on the show tonight, we'll talk with Pastor Corey Brooks. Pastor Brooks You know, just got back from the Aspen Ideas Festival. He's talking about issues of violence, also inequality. We'll talk with him. He'll be my guest at the big table. Surprised this is our first time having him, but I'm very happy to have him here so we can have a conversation about what's happening when it comes to violence, when it comes to inequality, when it comes to morality, a word that's been thrown around, and also the national storyline when it comes to Chicago and violence. Pastor Corey Brooks is my guest tonight at the big table. Coming up at 7:30, Mike Fouché is going to join us. We'll talk politics. Springfield, while you were enjoying your hot dogs, they almost passed the budget. They're at the 4/5 mark. They're the B-minus of budget passing is happening right now in Springfield. Also, later tonight, pop music sensation Night Jewel will be with us. Very excited to have her on the show. Los Angeles-based. She's blowing up. She's got a great new record. She's coming to Chicago soon. She emulates Janet Jackson. So we'll talk with her. And we got some other stuff as well. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martyr, who's here right now because weather is an issue. Rob?
Yeah, rolling in again. Severe thunderstorm warning, Justin, for northeastern Kendall, northwestern Will, southeastern Kane, and southwestern DuPage counties. This is in effect until 7:45 tonight. A severe thunderstorm located right now near Aurora. It's moving south at about 20 miles per hour.
All right. We'll keep you updated on that every about 10 minutes here on The Download tonight. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right. It's The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's do the carryout. All right. Here are today's top stories. State legislator ruined all of the reporters' 4th of July plans, but they did get a budget done, so I guess we can live with it. The House and Senate voted through both spending and revenue plans. The Senate sent the bills to the governor, who promptly did what he does best, a veto. But the Senate was able to override said veto, so now it goes back to the House, who has to get the 71 votes needed to override the governor. They had plenty more than that to pass the bill in the first place, but they counted on a handful of Republicans crossing the aisle. Will those Republicans do it again? Join us next time. Governor Rauner says that this budget deal is short on reform, heavy on taxes. As a matter of fact, it includes next to nothing that the governor was asking for in turnaround agenda items. Long time without a budget to have a budget pass with none of that stuff. Yes, the famed income tax goes up to 4.95%, and there's no property tax freeze in the bill. So expect to pay more to live in the state of Illinois. How much more? It breaks down to about $720 a year. Oh, $720. Wow, love that number. Go figure. We should bring back that. Remember we had the promo where you could win $720? Now more than ever. Right? So is that make or break? Probably not for most Illinois residents, but couple that with the rising property taxes to cover schools or more importantly school pensions. And there could be some serious sticker shock in the near future, but probably less shock than if the state goes into year three without a budget and we're downgraded to junk status, which for the governor, who is supposed to be a whiz at business, doesn't seem overly terrified of this proposition, right? Wouldn't a guy who made his fortune in buying, selling, and borrowing be somewhat concerned about our credit? Either A, it's not a big deal and the media is making too much hay about the threat of this historical action, or B, Rauner isn't very good at business, or maybe C, the government's good at long-term planning, and this was expected. Is there a D? None of the above? I'll take none of the above. What the heck happened with Chicago violence this week? In the four-day weekend saw over 100 shot, 15 killed, an alarming number in a year that was seeing a decrease in violence. The police were confident this was going to be a down holiday, but in the last 12 hours, the city exploded. The Trib reported that over 42 people were shot between 3:30 p.m. and 3:30 a.m. yesterday. Almost half of the four-day weekend totals. What changed? The police are looking into it and are wondering if their gunshot radar, yes, they have gunshot radar, was flummoxed by amateur fireworks spreading police officers too thin. But seriously, not a strong weekend for Chi-Town. Mayor Emanuel put out an editorial in New York Times telling New York and Washington, D.C. that we're better than them when it comes to mass transit. That went over well. He also called for a gasoline tax to help with infrastructure projects. But as all the New Yorkers heard was, no way is your pizza better than ours. And have responded with Emmanuel headlines and op-eds of their own, slamming the mayor and the city of Chicago. So yeah, usually us Chicagoans wouldn't take that from New York. But yeah, it is Mayor Emmanuel, and technically he did start it. So nothing to see here, folks. Move along. Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle said if she can't get her sugary drink tax back on track soon, she will be forced to cut the county budget by 10% across the board. So here's where we're at, people. Close a couple forest preserves versus my daily Dr. Pepper. Goop, 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 goop. In weather, it held up nicely over the 4th, but now we got some severe weather coming through. Flooding up north possible. I'm paying attention. It Rob's all over it. He'll have an update in just a couple minutes here. In sports, the Cubs got one in this afternoon, beating the Rays 7-3. John Jay fitting in nicely with the Cubs. Hit a 3-run homer off the bench. Put him in the All-Star game. Cubs are currently 503 games back of the Brewers, who are playing tonight against the Orioles. The Cubs have a makeup game with the Brewers tomorrow and a 3-game set with the Pirates at Wrigley. Then almost everyone gets a long week off to contemplate this extremely mediocre first half. Right now, the Cubs have one All-Star, and that's closer Wade Davis. There's a chance Chris Bryant will make it for the final slot, but he's currently losing the fan vote to Justin Turner of the Dodgers. Just to give you an idea, it's the guy with the red beard. He's beating the National League MVP for the last slot in the All-Star game after the Cubs won the World Series. I think it's got to mean something that the Cubs didn't get one slot from fan voting. And before you say, well, you know, Ryan Zimmerman's having a great year. Come on. The All-Star game isn't about some journeyman hitting 320. No, the All-Star game's there to showcase your stars. You know, the guys with SNL cameos, the guys who have their own cereal boxes, not a guy who hits a lot of doubles. I mean, what country do we live in? Rizzo, Bryant, Zobrist. Okay, maybe not Zobrist, but they should be in the game. On the south side, the Sox have Avisail Garcia, who, let's face it, is having the best year of his entire career, and he's still a bubble choice and probably only in the game because you got to have one guy per team, and the Sox really don't have any other viable candidates. Maybe Jose Abreu? Maybe the setup guy? I don't know. I'd be okay in this case if the league was like, you know what, that one guy per team rule? Eh, we're relaxing it. No White Sox. Bring on more Red Sox! So we could have like 19 Red Sox because you know that baseball loves the Red Sox. Sox had a chance to not only climb out of the cellar in the American League, but move up a slot in the Central with a win against the A's today, and they couldn't do it. The A's got to Sox pitcher Tom Journeyman. I'm sorry, no, Mike Pelfrey started today. So they got to Mike Pelfrey and beat the Sox, taking 2 of 3 from the series. The Sox will get a day off and go to Coors Field to play the Rockies on Friday. A lot of big movement in NBA free agency. Gordon Hayward going to the Celtics. Zach Randolph heading to the Kings. Derrick Rose visiting the Clippers. Heck, even Taj Gibson on the move, landing with Thibs in Minnesota. Lots of big names still on the board. So what did the Bulls do this week? They went out and got their man, Justin Holiday, back with the Bulls. No, not Drew Holiday. This is Justin Holiday. He was the shooting guard that came over in one of the trades, didn't play. We let him go. He didn't play somewhere else. Now he's back. And now he's going to play, like, a lot. Probably start. Yeah, Justin Holiday. No, not Matt Holiday. That's baseball. This is Justin Holiday. No, not Holiday, the 80s pop song by Madonna. That's an 80s pop song. This is Justin Holiday. He's starting shooting guard for your Chicago Bulls. Also, no word on whether or not the Bulls will let Nikola Mirotic walk. I'm okay with that. It's hard watching all this crazy movement in the NBA, which each team getting new stars to root on, and we are rebuilding. I hate to sound all millennial, but can we win now? Is it possible? Just one of these guys? One of these guys who used to have a shoe contract? Also, when does football start? Soon? 24 days. Finally tonight, the end of landlines in Illinois. A new law on the governor's desk would stop forcing telephone companies to provide the service. So if you're still rocking the landline, it's just a matter of time till the government comes into your house and rips the phone right out of the wall. Laugh now, but when it happens, don't call me up and complain. Oh, that's right. You won't be able to. Oh. That's the carryout for July 5th, 2017. Hey, we got a lot of leftover potato salad and coleslaw. We're putting it together for a special. Come get your toe slaw. Rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? All right, coming up, Mike Boucher will be here. We'll talk Springfield. We'll talk sugary taxes. Rahm Emanuel's op-ed in the New York Times. A lot to talk about. He'll be here like he is every Wednesday. It's a download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Rob Martyr, how are you, my man?
I'm doing well, my friend. Thank
you. Great to have you back. How was your break?
It was nice. You know, went to the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Wisconsin.
That is the second most magical place on Earth.
How was it? Was it a good time?
It was good. Yeah. Hot. I mean, if you resign yourself to the fact that the minute you step out of your hotel room, you're just going to be sweating for the rest of the day, then you're fine.
It's always good. You're mentally prepared to go outside a door.
Oh, yeah.
Always good. Always good.
Well, it does hit you like a ton of bricks. I mean, you just walk right into it.
But it was good. The family liked it.
Oh, my God. What a racket. It's like Vegas down there. They give you the magic band, which gets you into the park. Your fast passes are hooked up to it. Of course, your credit card is attached to it as well. So as you walk through the myriad of gift shops coming off a ride or down Main Street, and the kid says, I want this and I want that. So, sure, put it on the band.
You just put it on the band.
Put it right on the band. No
problem. No. I didn't know they did that. That's actually ingenious
on
their
part.
Put it on the band. There's a hashtag.
And then the night before you're ready to leave, they give you a box, and it's your bill.
Print this out, and it's a carry, and then they won't let you carry it on the plane on the way back.
We had a good time.
Well, that's good.
Thanks.
Well, good for we're thinking about possibly a trip out to a Disney property, so it's good to know that you gave me that heads up.
Yeah. Just be careful.
All right.
You know,
some light rock.
I feel like, is this like the Eagles or something like that? You know, I don't know what that is.
I don't know what song it is, but I will say my guess is that it's a song called Positive Spin on the News Out of Springfield. It's a 70s jam.
That's Positive News Out of Springfield. I think that was done by the Eagles.
I think it was. Mike Boucher in studio as he is every Wednesday. Mike, good to see you, buddy.
It's excellent to be here.
Of course, with the Daily Line, he covers all things Chicago, Cook County, and Springfield. Let's start with Springfield. We saw over the 4th of July holiday some movement.
I kind of made
a joke at the top of the show.
Movement.
Poor reporters. I was watching Instagram after Instagram of my friends who were stuck in Springfield.
Yeah. Look, here's my seat. This is great.
And we should all feel bad for them.
I know.
But some movement today. I mean, further than we've seen in the last 3 years, we've got a pass of the spending and revenue packages, a veto of those, back through the Senate. It is an override of the veto. It is now in the House, which is expected tomorrow to vote on this in the midday, 1 o'clock, 1:30. Mike, where are we at? I mean, if you read the newspapers right now or read anything about this, they say, wow, budget movement. We may have a budget. This is about, oh my God, this might be a budget. Not so fast.
Yeah. I mean, so the reason why it passed in the Senate is the Democrats have a veto-proof majority. Okay. Poof. You go right through. Do whatever it is that the Democrats want. Done. So over here in the House, though, over there in the House, this is the House right here. Over in the House, though, the Democrats don't have a veto-proof majority.
And this was a big thing of the election. Last election, we saw this play out.
That's right. But not only that, is that there's a lot of staunch anti-tax Democrats who will never vote for anything for a tax. And they're suburban Democrats who are very concerned about being able to stay in their seat. And if you looked at the last budget vote, there were a number of Democrats, maybe 11 or 12 or 13, that didn't vote for the budget. And I think that we should expect to see the
same thing
again.
And they were replaced by 12, 13, four, I think it was 14
Republicans
that did vote for it. And I wonder about that, Mike, and this might be a side conversation, but the idea of the politics of that, of Madigan knowing he has the vote, so he tells his Democrats who may actually face a legitimate fight somewhere, vote no on this.
I don't think that this is a situation where Madigan is controlling.
You don't think he has the control to say, you can vote no on this, I got the votes otherwise?
You know, one thing is that Madigan has a reputation of almost never forcing somebody to vote for something that would kill them. You know, he but doesn't this force fit people to go on and votes on things.
But that's
yeah,
what this is.
True.
This would conspiracy theory of Justin's.
Yeah.
Would fit into the idea that he got people who didn't. You never want him to vote for something that's going to kill him back at the primary.
That's
he
true.
Got them to do the opposite, which is to not vote for it.
Well, I'm sure at this point right now, Speaker Madigan is going to those 12 people and saying, hey,
now
how you
gotta
doing?
Do it. Yeah.
You know, it's time. And that might be the case. But it's also that Madigan is pointing to the Republican leadership and saying, look, if you guys actually want to be seen as responsible, this is the time you need to be able to put some votes on this.
Now, do you see that happening? I mean, because we saw as a gesture of faith that
Durkin's, I think there are some definite Republicans in the House that want to vote for this. But, you know, the whole issue for Republicans is that this is about fiscal responsibility and that there are a number of Republicans that have state universities and other facilities that are depending on the state funds in order to stay open. You know, that's a big deal for them. But this today, the really big news came from Moody's, the investor service, the bond rating agency, that said, you know, actually, if Illinois, even if you pass this budget, we may still downgrade you to junk because you have $14 billion of unpaid bills that are not being addressed in this budget, and you have $261 billion of unpaid pensions.
Right.
So, you know, for a lot of Republicans, all of a sudden, they are thinking to themselves, boy, you know, I stick my neck out for fiscal responsibility and still Illinois gets junk status. That doesn't look so good.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, with that looming, that seemed to be the one thing that pushed everyone to the center aisle. This concept that junk status could be in the immediate future if we don't do this right now. So if that's hanging over anyway, what would be the incentive for anyone to give up their entrenched position when it comes to passing a budget?
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of things that aren't in this budget. You know, there's no addressing the backlog of bills. There's no addressing pension reform. We're just talking about money things, right? Not all the other stuff that Madigan and Rauner said that they want to address. And there's nothing in here that really addresses schools. The education funding reform is really not taken on here. There's some money that goes to CPS, but really not.
Give me a 101 on Springfield. Would that just come at a later date? Is this just another fight that would happen later in the summer?
There's a fall session when they could pick it back up again. Or it could be that either the governor or the speaker or the president of the Senate says, nope, we're still going to have more session over the summer. I mean, going back to the Blagojevich days, they didn't have the budget resolved, and so they kept going through all summer. I think it went until mid-August when they finally made their votes. So, you know, that could happen again.
But that's been a big point of
contention.
Cruddy. And
there's,
Mike,
there's
I ask
no
you,
good outcome here.
I ask you because, you know, I'm fairly
play the music
ignorant.
Again.
Yeah, right. I'm fairly ignorant to the ways of the way this kind of plays out. But I would assume that the big fight, and has been a fight in Springfield, was over education funding. If education funding is not in the budget that is being presented to the governor, that the governor vetoed and down, I mean, are we still at the point where not just Chicago schools, but other schools around the state are going to have trouble opening their doors in the fall?
Maybe. I mean, I think it's gradations of horribleness for all these different places. I mean, what if it's not this year, it's next year? I mean, the state, there are a lot of school districts around the state that are really looking at some serious problems because so much of their funding is dependent on local property taxes. And if you are in a school district that doesn't have a significant commercial or industrial tax base in order to look at, or a lot of sales tax that you can put into your local government, you've got problems. I mean, you know, there's a lot of school districts that are south of I-55 in Cook County that are really looking at bankruptcy in the next 2 years. And there's a lot of others further downstate. I mean, you know, East St. Louis and places around there in St. Clair County, I think, are in a lot of problems.
So I guess just the idea that we would have a budget that would be passed, and even if tomorrow the vote comes through and they have the majority, 71 votes to make this happen, it's not like a snap of the fingers that Illinois' problems are over.
No.
Not having a budget for 3 years,
let's get real.
We're going to feel it in the next five.
This is basically the... You have a gunshot wound victim who came in. Basically, the budget at this point is that you're stopping the bleeding, but you still got all kinds of internal organ damage. And, oh, yeah, there's a bullet still swimming around inside of there. I mean, it'd be really gross. Can you play the music? I mean, you know, the thing is that the state is really, really messed up in a lot of ways.
Where do you see this going tomorrow? Do you think that Speaker Madigan can get bipartisan support and find the votes to override the governor's veto?
I was hopeful until Moody's made its statement. I mean, I think that that really makes it difficult for a lot of Republicans. They no longer have the story of I am the white knight riding to save the state anymore. You know, if Moody's does actually downgrade the state after a Republican, let's say you're a Republican member and you vote for this,
and you're
in an area that's largely anti-tax and you still have this junk bond rating that comes along, you're the goat. You're an idiot. And when I say goat, I don't mean greatest of all time. You're a cursed goat.
Yeah.
You're a cursed
Mike
goat.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line joining us to really bring us down this Wednesday afternoon or even before the vote tomorrow. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's talk about issues closer to home. I find it very interesting, the op-ed in the New York Times, Rahm Emanuel this week.
Yeah, right, man? He knows how to push all the buttons.
He really does. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. Uh, 312 says, it's not light rock, it's yacht rock. Gary Rafferty.
Oh, is it?
Right down the line.
All right.
Of course, Beats by Zim. Right down the line. Get it?
Got it.
Right down the
line.
Got
it. You know, I got to say, I just hear this and I think, I'm just relaxed.
All right, let's talk about the op-ed this weekend. You know, buried in the 4th of July festivities, but the New York Times op-ed, Rahm Emanuel, mayor of Chicago, does a mass transit op-ed because there are two storylines happening in New York and Washington, D.C., where
right. They
are having trouble with their mass transit lines.
Right.
And he does an op-ed that says, no troubles in Chicago.
Right. You guys are tools. I mean, it was awesome. It was, you know, Chicago's trains are the best. They run on time. We didn't spend any money on expansion. Nah, we spent all our money on fixing it up,
right. Making
it work great.
So, of course, he does this, and he also advocates for gasoline tax for infrastructure projects, other things.
Yeah.
But the backlash, I mean, it's like the 4th of July is over.
Right.
Today and New York Post, I think it was, and maybe another New York paper, op-ed, editorials, headlines, dumb, they call him a, they really took this story on, but
dumb
they're like
Rahm.
Dumb Rahm, where they're just after the Chicago mayor, and they're mad. New York press is mad.
Yeah, well, wouldn't you? I mean, imagine if, like, the mayor of New York City, de Blasio, put an editorial in the
Chicago Tribune
and said, hey, by the way, you guys are dumb. And we do it great in New York. What if he ran a story about how great crime control is in New York City and how they just get everything done right? Can you imagine that? That would be aces. I think everybody in Chicago, we would be burning like de Blasio in effigy on Michigan Avenue right here.
Why did Rahm Emanuel do this? I mean, I can understand the idea.
I have no clue. I honestly, this is one of those things where, you know, you're in the Rahm bubble. And I don't. Part of it is I think he doesn't really have anybody that can just like stand in front of him and go, whoa, stop, bad idea, don't do that, no. And I think that he believes that he has a solid sense of what America really wants, which is more Rahm Emanuel. I mean,
is there some sort of long-term strategy, to, even if it's bad press, to get Chicago in the news? Is he trying to push back on a violence kind of storyline that's playing out nationally? What is the mayor attempting to do?
I don't know. I mean, let's just imagine. Let's do, like, you know, I'm inside Rahm Emanuel's brain for a moment,
right.
Which is
inside Rahm.
Right, inside Rahm. And let's just imagine he's thinking to himself, well, what I'd really like to do is get everybody in the country to know how great it is in Chicago, that things are going really well, and that we do stuff great here. So I'm going to tell everyone through the New York Times, which everybody reads, right? And not really, but, you know, in his mind. And so that people will know that Chicago does stuff great. We have a great train system. You could take a train and get to work, and it'll be great. I did that today. I'll do it tomorrow. And, you know, people in New York, not so much. You know, it smells bad. Takes a long time.
It's even worse. We kind of made the joke at the top, just the concept of usually we would come to the defense of a Chicagoan who's being – lambasted all over the New York newspapers. But in this case, you're kind of like,
yeah, he stuck his chin out. It was like, hey, guys, come hit me. And everyone was like, sure, why not? They hit him right in the face. I don't know. I don't know why he did it. It didn't seem
a
smart move. It would have been, I mean, if you could just written it so it said something like, you know, New York has its problems and we feel bad for you and we'd like to work with you a little bit more. We have some ideas that we'd like to share. Here are some of our ideas that we'd like to share. But instead, it was so straightforward. You guys stink.
Well, maybe I'll play devil's advocate. I'll back the mayor only in the sense that there are so many other newspapers that get in our business about violence or other things, and they like to op-ed nonstop about how we need to fix the city and these things. So maybe this is a way that he's kind of taking a shot at the New York media as well.
I guess, maybe. But I mean, you know, he writes a lot of these sort of things.
Yeah.
And so it's like he's constantly sticking himself out there so that he can, you know, tell everybody how many big ideas he has. Hmm. Outside of Chicago, and you know, you don't really see de Blasio writing these things. You don't see the mayor of LA writing these sort of things. You know, they're content to be mayors of their cities.
Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle today shot back at the sort of temporary stay on the sugary drinks tax.
Right.
This was the big story coming out of last week, and she said, if I don't get my tax, I'm going to have to go 10% across the board at all county departments. That's not the first time she's threatened this, but this is a sort of a big deal.
That was the threat that she made when they were first talking about the sugar sweetened beverage tax way back when. And she was very specific about what the cuts would be. And she, you know, went so far as to say, well, I think it's going to be this many employees from this place and this many employees from this place. And, you know, I think that really gave commissioners the heebie-jeebies, and they were very concerned about it. And that's how she got them over the line in order to have that vote. You know, I do really wonder about the implementation aspect. I mean, that really seems to be the problem here.
And less about the nanny state and more about the ounces per penny and how, because there were a lot of stores and chains that pushed back saying our registers aren't even equipped for that.
Right.
Kind of thing.
When NCR, National Cash Register, the company that, you know, do all the cash registers, can't really come up with a system in order to manage it. I think that's a problem. and, you know, you've also got an issue with, you know, are you measuring it by ounce for each product? And, you know, what do you do with refills at a restaurant? And, you know, I think it's a problem. I mean, I don't know how they're going to be able to deal with it.
Does she have to bring it back, rewrite it in some way and present it again? Or does she really go after the court to say, get rid of this stay? We're implementing this. Deal with it.
They're going to fight it. My understanding is that they're going to fight it. The next stage is going to be in the next week or two where the court is going to be ruling on not a temporary restraining order but an actual stay. And so, you know, if that actually goes through, then that's a real issue for her. And they'll have to go back and probably redraft it, make some changes, which is kind of a nightmare, actually, because this was a big, difficult fight on the county board floor. So that would mean that they'd have to do it all over again. Mm. And, you know, I've talked to people from the American Beverage Association, I think that's what it's called, AMBEV, as well as other people from the Illinois Retailers Merchants Association, and they are just... Man, they are gunning for this. They really feel like this is going to be a major problem for them. They take a look at Philadelphia and see that the amount of sales of soda and those kind of things have really dropped precipitously, which hurts a lot of these small stores. I mean, you know, it's like what happened when cigarette sales started dropping. A lot of gas stations started losing money. People, you know, these are small mom-and-pop businesses that are going to lose money. And I think they're thinking if this manages to succeed in Chicago, that's going to be a national platform, and every other city is going to start passing this.
So beyond a temporary stay, there's a fight gearing up on both sides. That's going to be like, this is not over just because a judge said, hold up for a second.
And there's also an expectation that, you know, I'm hearing that there's talk, well, you know, state of Illinois needs some revenue. You know, how about a sugar-sweetened beverage tax? You know, so all of a sudden you could have all of Illinois doing it. And I think that if that happens, you know, you remember when New York City first started the smoking ban, which was like 2000, you know, they were an outlier for a long time. But people then started figuring out, oh, we should do this. And then it just went through the whole country very fast. And all of a sudden, you had smoking bans in every major city and a lot of states.
You think that could be, I mean, that we could see ourselves going the same route with sugary
drinks?
Absolutely. Sodas, things like that?
I think that's what the advocates of stopping the tax are saying. Yeah, I think they're very concerned about it. And these are places like 7-Eleven and all these little small mom and pa shops, you know, all these little grocery stores. They really depend on that stuff. You know, gas stations, they really depend on it. You know, where do you go buy a pop? You go buy a pop at a little store or something like that. You know, maybe you buy it at Jewel, but you know, you do it is those kind of impulse buys.
Okay, last thing, real quick, as we wrap up here. Tomorrow, the vote in the House is at what, 1:30?
1:30 is when they're going to convene. So it may not be until later in the day.
But in the afternoon tomorrow, we will know
afternoon
whether
evening.
Or not the budget that was presented
That's right. And early tomorrow morning,
Democrats.
Senate President Cullerton is giving a speech at the City Club. So that'll be very interesting.
So
he's giving a speech at 8 in the morning.
Big day in Springfield tomorrow. Mike Fouché, The Daily Line. You can catch it at dailyline.net. Also, the Aldercast, which is Friday's the podcast that comes out also here on WGN+. Mike, great to see you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rob. It is a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour tonight. Some fun. Night Jewel is going to join us. She is a L.A.-based pop singer. She's got a brand new record. It's great. She's emulating Janet Jackson. Really talking about a pop sound from the 80s that really was Janet's sound. That's what she's going after. So she's had a lot of success with pointing out that that's her inspiration. Artists like Janet Jackson, Mariah Carey, others like that. But it's sort of like the 80s style of it. It's a different kind of style than sort of what happened to maybe Mariah Carey and as her career went on. But we'll talk with Night Jewel about that. Also, Lola Bellatro's back in studio. The guys for the best grunge, acoustic, country, soul, blues, ska, polka, grunge outfit in part of Chicago. They got new music, so they'll be in studio tonight. Always fun when those guys come through. And we'll play the Swap Meet with Greg Flamm coming up a little bit later in the show, of course. Well, as we talked about all day in Chicago, the shootings this 4th of July weekend were staggering. Over 100 people were shot. 15 lost their lives. This number is particularly frustrating for Chicago police, since they were hoping that the numbers would be lower based on the same strategy they implemented during Memorial Day weekend, in which the shootings were down. As police strategies change and political rhetoric increases, it seems like violence in Chicago's South and West Sides stay the same. And so does that mean it's time to start looking at this terrible societal problem through a different lens? The Trump administration has committed ATF resources to Chicago and even intimated that Chicago's problem is one of morality. My guest tonight at the Big Table knows a bit about morality and more of the impact violence is having on Chicago's communities. Pastor Corey Brooks is the senior pastor of New Beginnings Church of Chicago. He's also the executive director of Project Hood. Brooks has been involved in this issue for years, and he's famous for occupying a rooftop to force a demolition, but more to protest inequality, and for endorsing Governor Rauner back in 2013, pointing out the troubled relationship that Chicago's black communities had with the Democratic Party for the better part of the last 50 years. It's my pleasure to welcome Pastor Corey Brooks to the Big Table tonight to talk violence, morality, politics, and the black exodus from the city of Chicago. Pastor Brooks, great to meet you. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Justin. I'm excited to be on the show, and thank you for having me on tonight.
You know, I guess we start with the news. Are you surprised at the numbers from the four-day 4th of July weekend for shootings in Chicago?
You know, I'm really not surprised by it. Chicago has been dealing with violence for a lot of years, and it seems to be continuing to increase every year, every month, every summer. And so I'm not surprised by the numbers. I was hoping that with the fact that the feds were coming in, that some help would be sent and the numbers would go down. But I'm definitely not surprised.
I mean, this number, I mean, and it does remind me of a couple of years ago when they had the four-day weekend and they talked about the numbers being similar. But I mean, the police are frustrated. I have never seen the police in the way that they responded today, talking about frustration, use the word frustration. They really felt they had a strategy to take on violence on Chicago's South and West Side. And when I say that, it was particular this time. When you look at the demographics,
absolutely.
What's happening? I mean, I know you're not surprised, but when the police have come out and said, this is our strategy. We're going to bring this down. And you have this rash of shootings in a 12-hour period. What's happened? Why is that happening?
Well, it's not a police problem. I really do believe that Chicago police are doing the very best that they can do. They're doing the job that they're supposed to do. They're trying to strategize and come up with different ideas to help solve the issue. But when it's not a police problem, a policing problem altogether, then it's kind of difficult to solve it. What we're dealing with in Chicago is a myriad of issues. Specifically, I believe, one of economic equality. And I think that economic equality is driving a lot of the violence. As you mentioned, the violence is in certain areas. It's not all over Chicago.
No.
You don't see it downtown on the north side. You don't see it in certain suburban parts of Chicago. You see it in certain impoverished areas where there are high rates of unemployment, where there are lack of jobs, where there are a lack of businesses and development. That's where you tend to see most of the violence in Chicago. It's centralized.
Yeah, I mean, you've been, this is not the first time you've mentioned that and you've talked about that. I mean, as more and more resources are at least positioned to help in those communities, what needs to happen? Is this when you say development,
right,
does business have to go into a neighborhood like Inglewood?
Yes. I'm not talking about throwing money at a problem. That's something that the Democrats have done for years. And throwing money at the problem in our neighborhood does not solve the issue. What we need to have happen is that we need entrepreneurs. We need businesses. We need development. We need to find ways that we can solve the issues in our neighborhood by creating opportunities. One of the things that we lack with so many young African-Americans in our neighborhood is that they don't have options. They don't have opportunities. Those things need to be created. And the only way I believe that we create them is to get an economic base, to create an economic foundation with the opportunities and options that are available and should be available to all Americans. That's what we need on the west side and the south side of Chicago.
Pastor, we had Amara Enya and Mario Smith were on. They were reloading the news last week, and we were talking about the summer jobs program, other things about as we were preparing for what could possibly happen with violence in the 4th of July weekend. And there was this push, the callers, and we had a really interesting conversation about how do you get the kid that gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning to sell squares on loose squares on a corner to be interested in getting a job, to work in school, when this is not a question. In most cases, I think there's a stereotype. Right. There's a stereotype of this kid that he can't find any. He's lazy. He's waking up at 4 o'clock. That's not the case. There's an ambition and there's something there. How do you get that kid?
Yeah, because if he's waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, he's definitely ambitious. He's definitely not a lazy guy. But what has to happen is that we have to give him an alternative. You can't take away something and expect for a person not to try to survive, not to try to live their life. So we have to give them an alternative. And I think and believe when you give them a positive alternative and surround them with mentorship, surround them with affirmation, acceptance, approval, that's what everybody's looking for. And when you give an individual that, I believe they'll take the positive route every time. These kids, listen, they don't want to get up and sell cigarettes and sell marijuana and sell drugs and have to wait and watch behind their back to see if the next guy is going to try to shoot them and kill them and to get them off their block or to see if the feds are going to swoop in and pick them up. No one wants to really live their life like that. But when you don't feel you have options and when you don't feel you have any alternatives and all you see is blight and people impoverished and you see no businesses, you see no economic development, then you start to feel like, what else is there for me to do? I'm hopeless. I'm in a situation that I can't get out. I don't know how to get out. No one is trying to help me to get out. And I'm not looking for a person to give me a handout. I'm looking for a hand up. And when I don't find that, it makes it kind of difficult for me to live my life. And so that's the reason why people turn to situations that they normally would not turn to when they don't feel that they have any other options.
In studio with me tonight, Pastor Corey Brooks. He's a senior pastor at New Beginnings Church of Chicago, also the executive director of Project Hood. Let's take a quick break. We'll stay on time tonight. We'll come back more with Pastor Brooks. I want to talk about morality. I want to talk about some of the national storylines that are coming out about Chicago and Chicago's violence. And also get your take. I mean, you just were at the Aspen's Idea Festival talking about these very same issues to a big crowd of people gathered to hear more about what's happening in Chicago. So we'll get a summary from you on the results of that. Pastor Brooks in studio. Stay with us. Pastor Corey Brooks in studio with me tonight here on The Download. Justin Kaufman. Pastor Brooks, a senior pastor of New Beginnings Church of Chicago, also the executive director of Project Hood. We're talking a little bit about violence. You know, and I don't want to just particularly talk about that because we're coming off of the 4th of July holiday. But, I mean, it's striking in this town that the news is cyclical. I mean, it boggles the mind that every holiday weekend we have the same conversations and the same reaction, same police press conference, everything's the same. I mean, do we have to shift the paradigm a little? Do we have to start thinking differently about how not only do we view violence in Chicago, but how we address it?
Absolutely. You know, insanity is to do the same thing over and over and over, expecting a different result. And that's what we're doing in Chicago. We keep doing the same things over and over, and we're expecting to get different results, and we never do. It's not until we change the paradigm. It's not until we start looking at it from a different perspective and a different point of view and attacking the issue of violence from a whole different perspective. And that's the reason why I pound on it. I hollered and scream about it, that economic equality is a big factor. And until we start looking at that issue and trying to arrive at a way that we can solve it, I think we're going to continue to see the violence in Chicago. And I think even if you send in feds and if you send in more police and hire more police, I still think you're going to see an escalation. As long as you have these pockets of strong poverty, there's going to be extreme violence.
It sounds like a great approach. I think everybody who would be listening right now, us included, would say we'd love to have equality, right? I think across the board. But how do you accomplish that in a world that has a certain economic system, a system that seems to thrive off of putting us into hierarchical like categories? How do you get to a point where equality is the mainstream conversation and it's not the effective inequality?
Absolutely. Well, it starts, John Maxwell says, everything rises and falls on leadership. It starts with leadership. And at the very highest of leadership, you have to have a person who is visionary enough to say, listen, we're not just going to take care of certain parts of Chicago, but we're going to implore all of our efforts to make sure that all of Chicago has opportunity, that all of Chicago has economic base, and that we're going to make sure that all of Chicago gets the chance to do better. And so it starts at the very top. The person who is leading the city has to say, listen, we're going to do something different. We're going to attack this from a different perspective. And then he, along with the community, we have to creatively figure out ways to get businesses to be involved in the city in certain segments. And not only inviting businesses, but the creation of businesses. I believe that if you really want to pull people out of poverty, entrepreneurship is the way.
Well,
I'm a big fan of capitalism.
Talk the talk, walk the walk. I guess we can get into that. But I mean, Mayor Emanuel did go to Malcolm X College. We saw the big announcement. It was November, talking this very same game about the idea of the private sector of Chicago needing to step up to help deal with societal issues. Violence named as one of them.
Right.
Education being the other, equality being the other. I mean, it felt like he was at least making a public display to say that it can't just be the government.
Right.
That we're all, our corporate citizens need to step up and be a part of this. Do you believe, I don't want to say do you believe him, but I mean, what's your take on when the leadership of a mayor coming forward and saying?
Right. It's okay to ask me if I believe him, because I'm going to say absolutely not, because I want to believe him. I want him to lead our city. I want him to be, I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for Chicago. I love Chicago. I love the mayor, and I want him to do his best. But when it comes to him saying it and doing it, that's two different things. And he says a lot, but does very little when it comes to places where they're impoverished. And those places just happen to be black and brown places. So until he it's either put up or shut up. And I think if he's going to talk it, he needs to push a little stronger. You know, he has the wherewithal to bring businesses and to help businesses to come into the city of Chicago in blighted areas. There's things that he can do. But I also believe that the community can do a better job as well. Individuals like myself as well. So I don't put all the blame on him. I don't shoulder him with everything. It's just as much as my fault and other leaders in our community. We have to make an environment where we can have people to come in, and we have to take it upon ourselves to say, listen, we're not going to wait on government to solve our issues. We're not going to wait on people to come in and save us. There's no Superman here. We're going to take the bull by the horn, and we're going to do something ourselves. And that's the reason why I'm really big on trying to create as many entrepreneurs as I can to take guys off the block and put them in the boardroom. That's exactly what I'm trying to do.
You know, you've been very outspoken about politics and leadership in this town, but not just the town, the state. I mean, I mentioned in the lead that you endorse Governor Rauner. You're one of the only African-American pastors to do so,
right,
instead of Governor Quinn. And it maybe wasn't as much about Governor Quinn, but more about the idea that the Democratic Party has failed the African-American community, especially in Chicago, for years.
Yeah.
I mean, you used to mention 50 years in some of the quotes you're talking about. I mean, do you feel that with, I mean, does that continue since this has been a one-party rule in the city of Chicago for, I mean, I can't even say, yeah, I don't even know when the last Republican was in charge,
right,
here. I mean, do you think that a lot of the issues that are happening in the city of Chicago in this, which you,
yeah,
just mentioned, happened because of the Democratic Party?
I really believe that black people in Chicago, along with myself, we have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, ran amok, shipwrecked. I believe it without a shadow of a doubt. And I'll say it and I'll keep saying it, regardless of how many people say I'm a sellout for saying it. I really do believe that Democrats in Chicago have done an injustice to black people. We have been loyal and we have been very committed to the party. You will not find a voting group of people who have been as committed as black people have been to the Democratic Party. But what have we gotten in return? Go to the west side, go to the south side of Chicago, come visit me on the south side of Chicago, and I'll show you what Democrats have done for the loyalty that black people have given them. And you will find abandoned buildings. You will find closed up commercial buildings. You will find high crime. You will find the worst of schools. You will find the worst neighborhoods in America, right in Chicago. And that, to me, should not be for a group that has been so loyal to another group. And so that's the reason why I say the things that I say. And that's the reason why I really do believe what I say. And I'm going to keep saying it, because it's just that in and of itself is a morality issue.
The only pushback would it be the same with any political party? I mean, are we talking about systemic racism or inequality where, you know, if it's a Republican Party or a Democratic Party or an unnamed party that was in charge, that you would have similar outcomes to the way that what's happened here,
right,
in Chicago?
And my pushback would be for anyone to be loyal to a political party and not reap the rewards of it. That is injustice. One of the reasons that you're loyal to the political party is that so you can meet the needs of your community. And so would it be different? I believe so. That's the reason why I decided to go with Governor Rauner. Unfortunately, it hasn't turned out as good as I would like for it to. I'm hoping that eventually it's going to turn around. I don't believe that it's all his fault. I believe that he's dealing with a really big situation in the state of Illinois. But at the end of the day, I really do believe that things would be different if we were not as loyal to one political party.
It's an interesting concept. And I mean, you mentioned the idea of leadership as well, and you called yourself out as well.
Right.
You know, it's very, I mean, politics has always been about ethnicities.
Right.
I mean, different ethnicities will join in with different parties, especially in the city of Chicago, to sort of divvy up the pie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the same for the African-American community. And we've seen it with Mayor the Older Daley and the son, as well as Harold Washington and even with Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
Does the black community in Chicago, and Marilyn Katz was on the show maybe a month or two ago, said you cannot win any elected office in Chicago or the state of Illinois if you do not have the support of the black community, and talking about Democrats. Is there going to be a time in which the black community would say, you're going to have to hustle for our vote? You don't automatically get it if you're the Democratic Party in the state of Illinois.
Well, if we don't, we're going to keep being treated like a prostitute. taken from us and getting really nothing for it. And so I think that there's going to have to come a time when we're going to have to say, if you want our votes, then you have to make sure that our communities are looked after. You have to make sure that we have an economic base. You have to make sure that our schools are funded just like the schools up north. You have to make sure that we have access to opportunities just like people who live in other parts. And if we don't do that, we're going to continue to see the same thing over and over, unless people who live in the community like myself finally are able to galvanize enough people to say, look, we're not going to wait on anyone. Let's change this ourselves. Let's really go hard and really be committed, and let's try to figure out a way. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, what I want to do, let's take a break for the news. What I want to do is talk a little bit more about that, about, you know, you mentioned entrepreneurship, but I also want to get at the idea, can issues in society be solved without the government, without a political party, without an election, all that kind of stuff? Can a community and the South and West Side be able to right the ship without politics? Yes. That's the conversation. Pastor Corey Brooks, the senior pastor of New Beginnings Church of Chicago, also the executive director of Project Hood, in studio tonight. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. My guest at the big table tonight, Pastor Corey Brooks, senior pastor of New Beginnings Church, Chicago, also the executive director of Project Hood. We're talking about not only the violence over the 4th of July weekend, but some of the issues of inequality and other things that are plaguing the African-American community here, specific communities in the South and West Side. And, you know, we talked a lot about, so far, just about politics. And before we move off of that, because I really do have other thoughts beyond Democrats, Republicans. Okay. Let's talk about the national storyline that is bubbling up, particularly as it pertains to the Trump administration, mm-hmm. and what President Trump continues, at whether it be at rallies or on Twitter, to sort of point out that something's going on in Chicago, or what a terrible place, almost, you know, in a kind of gleeful way, but in a way that sets and generically sort of throws a blanket over all of Chicago. What's your reaction to that as someone who, you know, you know the communities well, and you've supported a Republican in mm-hmm. Bruce Rauner? What's your reaction to a national storyline, the one that's playing out for Chicago?
Well, it's sad to see, because Chicago is a wonderful city, a beautiful city with beautiful people, so many different cultures. And it's sad to see on the national level that we're looked at as if we're a killing field. I only wish that people would not just see the bad, but they would also see the good. But I do understand it, because what we are experiencing in Chicago is not normal. It's abnormal. And I think the national attention, then the spotlight, needs to be on the violence, because if not, then people are going to act as if what we're experiencing is just a normal occasion. And I think we got to continually, but, you know, show people that it's not normal.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
No problem.
I push back just on the idea that what we talked about in the first half about this sort of cycle and not really getting at the root causes of what might be happening when you're putting out 140 character tweets and what's going on in Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, are you and Rex Hupke had a great piece in the Chicago Tribune this weekend.
Absolutely.
about you know, when we talk about gun violence in Chicago, the president and the administration will say, oh, what a terrible situation in Chicago, all this killing. When they talk about opioid addiction, they say, oh, our poor kids.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily talk about it in the same way. They don't say our poor kids are failed because of an economic inequality or because of a gun trade. You see what I mean? Like there's a that's what Rex was pointing out. It's really interesting. I never thought about it that way before. But do you run the risk of the same things we just complained about in the first half of this conversation, exacerbated by 140 character tweets saying, look at Chicago. And look how bad. I mean, it's not a positive look on violence or any way to, if he came out and said, you know, I feel for the city, I want to give my resources, let's think about the root issues, that's a different story, isn't it?
Well, you know, everyone has their own agenda, including the president. And so let's not underestimate the fact that he is pushing an agenda. Whatever that agenda is, he's pushing it. And he does it from Twitter occasionally. But we have to have enough sense to understand that the issue is bigger than 140 characters. The issue of morality is bigger than someone standing at a press conference and saying, hey, Chicago has a morality issue, and just blanking it, the violence, as it's just morality. We have to be more intelligent than that and more astute than that. But at the same time, I'm appreciative of the fact that the president does tweet about the violence. I'm appreciative of the fact that at the press conference that they do mention the violence in Chicago, because we need to keep it in the forefront of people. And I think when we do that, it puts pressure on the leadership, and it puts pressure on us in the community to do something about it.
Your pastor, a man of faith, something, the word morality was thrown around this past weekend. Spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying that there's a crime issue. Crime is based on immorality. So there's a morality issue in Chicago. What's your take on that word?
I have no problem with it. And, you know, unlike some other leaders in our community who may get mad at Sarah Huckabee for saying that the crime is a morality issue, I tend to agree that it is part of it, that the issue of morality is a person being able to choose between good and bad. It's a principle that's in the earth, whether we like it or not. And when people choose to do bad, when they have the option to do good, that is a morality issue. And so we cannot negate the fact that morality is one of the things that drives some of the decisions that are being made. If my morality is in check, then I won't kill you. If my morality is in check, I won't sell drugs to you. If my morality is in check, I won't try to traffic women. If my morality is in check, there's certain things that I just will not do. But when morality is out of whack, as it is not just in Chicago, I mind you, but it's across America, we have America does have a morality issue, and we've had a morality issue since the creation of America, and we're going to always have morality issues. And so I really don't have a problem with her saying that.
Well, I mean, I want to say that most people who push back on the concept of morality really push back on this blanketing idea that gang warfare in certain areas, you know, has become Chicago has a morality issue. And even more so, I think that, you know, as you mentioned, the country itself may have a morality problem. But there are a lot of people who would look at it differently and say, I every day try to make the best for myself. I try to make the moral choices.
Yeah.
Even if I'm in a situation we talked about that does not have the same sort of equality and economic equality, and they may be parishioners to your church.
Right.
You know, the concept of a blanket statement, it just doesn't seem to work for me. I mean, I'm trying not to editorialize, but it makes me feel that you put this sort of this cloud over an entire city, and that we are somehow less of a people in the eyes of any sort of spirituality and faith. And that seems to be a little bit scary. Yeah.
I would push back a little bit and say that when I listened to her statement, I did not hear it as all of Chicago having a morality issue. I thought it was more so of the issue of the violence being a morality issue. And I think the issue of violence, whether to kill someone or not kill someone, that is a morality issue. And
yeah,
it's a morality
right.
issue that we have to address and that we have to continue to say something about, because if we don't, it becomes normal behavior. It becomes acceptable behavior, and people become desensitized. And I really do believe that because we won't bring the morality of it out, that people are accepting it, and it should not be accepted. 102 people being shot in a weekend on July 4th weekend in Chicago, 14 or 15 people dying. That is an immoral issue that needs to be addressed, and we have to continue to say it.
For someone who is a man of the faith and has your own church, New Beginnings, how do you preach morality to a kid who's on the block who may be making wrong decisions? How do you approach a subject like that, the idea of good and bad, you know, good and evil?
I think how you see the individual is a big thing. If you see individuals as inherently evil and that there's nothing good about them, then you're going to judge them differently. You're going to treat them differently. But for me, I see all human beings as just that, human. And I see all human beings, yes, we have flaws, but there is more good than bad. And I try to look for the good in every individual. And even in the most hideous individual who does the most hideous things, I believe at the core that there is something that we could speak to their humanity. And so I really just believe it comes down to how you see people. And a lot of times people see other people as evil and no positives, no good. And that's a problem. I think if we would raise our standard and judge each other a little better with the human perspective and seeing the God in all of us, I think that we could make the world a better place.
Let's go back to leadership. Pastor Corey Brooks in studio. You know, you talked about the mayor and we talked about the governor a bit. And you also turned the lens a little bit on yourself.
Yeah.
And I want to bring that up because there will be talk at a certain point, then you think of politics in general. I mean, I think of the famed book Boss by Mike Royko, where the black aldermen were getting deals for themselves, essentially, and leaving their communities behind. That's also been somewhat of a popular storyline when they talk about leaders in the African-American community, especially in the church.
Absolutely.
You know, what do leaders of an ethnic group like the African-Americans in Chicago, what do you have to do differently?
Well, I think that anyone who takes anything for their own good at the sake of leaving their community behind, they need to be held accountable, whether they're a pastor or an alderman or a senator or any a representative. Anyone who calls themselves speaking on the behalf of our community, but yet taking the rewards and not the responsibility, they need to be dealt with. How that dealing with is, I don't know. It could be different for other people, but especially for politicians, we need to get them out of office. And so many times, unfortunately, not just black politicians, but politicians have not looked out for the interests of their constituents. And that is a major, major problem. If you're supposed to represent a group, then you should be doing everything you can to make sure that that group is looked after. And it's sad to say, but like that book, Boss, where those black aldermen were taking things for themselves, those characteristics have been in our community for a long time, and I'm hoping and praying that they can be rectified.
How do you interact with or relate to youth? You know, there's been a lot made of the idea that the African-American leadership of communities or pastors and others that might have the ear of an older audience to people in your church, parishioners, but the kids, the ones who are perpetrating the violence and they're on the street, say in Englewood, was 17, 16 years old. You come around and try and talk to them, like, get out of here, old man.
Right.
I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that as a pastor, someone who is a leader of the African-American community? How do you relate to a 16-year-old kid who's standing on the block?
Well, you cannot take the separatist attitude. You have to see yourself as part of the community. And so for me, I've decided that our focus and our interest is going to be on young people in our community. So we have a free summer program where we have over 175 kids who are between the ages of 6 and 14 in a summer program. We then turn around and hired 25 teenagers between the ages of 15 and 19 to work as camp counselors. So we've decided to say, look, we're not going to wait on the government to come in here and try to fix this problem for us. Our church is going to step outside of these four walls. And here in Woodlawn, we're going to make sure, especially on King Drive, especially on Eberhard and St. Lawrence and Cottage Grove, we're going to change the dynamic and we're going to work our butts off to make our community a better place. And I really do believe if pastors and churches would come out of their four walls and do just the little that they can do. And I know that a lot of churches like ours have economic situations that prohibit them from doing all the things that they would like to do. But I also know that we have enough wherewithal to do the things that we can do. And so if all of us do that, we can make Chicago a better place in and of ourselves without the help and the assistance of government.
Do you see improvement when you do that, when you get out of your four walls and you go block to block and you take back those blocks? Do you see a deterrent or a reduction in crime?
Yes, I'll give you a perfect example. There, Woodlawn, especially where I am, the Chicago Sun-Times wrote an article last summer called O Block, the most dangerous block in the city of Chicago. Right, right. And they took the articles from, they took the years from 2012 to 2015. Well, if you start measuring 2000 after that article, 2015 up to now, we've had a drastic drop of murders in our neighborhood. So much so that even this weekend, I believe, we only had one shooting in the Woodlawn area. That in and of itself is amazing. When all of Chicago murders and shootings have gone up, and Woodlawn is going down, and I attribute that to the fact that we're engaged. Even tomorrow night, every Thursday, our church goes block to block in the neighborhood, knocking on doors. Can we do anything? Can we help you? Send your kids over to the camp. We're hiring kids. We're putting people to work. We just got a building Walgreens gave us so that we can create some entrepreneurs on 63rd and King Drive. So we're working hard. And I think when that happens, you'll start to see things change. Malcolm Gladwell has a great book called Tipping Point. And he talks about in that book, if you just keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, that eventually it'll spill over, all the hard work, all of the efforts that you put in. And that's what I believe it takes for you to keep pushing, keep pushing, keep believing, keep being positive, and eventually it'll start going the other direction.
I mean, that's a great notion. And for you to believe in it as one of the leaders of the Woodlawn community, that has to keep happening. How do you keep people who aren't pastors, who are kids or just people who live on the resident, from leaving Chicago or continuing this behavior, because they push and nothing happens?
You're asking how do you keep them from leaving Chicago?
How do you keep, I mean, just how do you keep everybody in that spirit of keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing?
Well, you got to have to understand that there are going to be some casualties. There are going to be some people who fall by the wayside, but that does not have to be the order of the day. You have to determine in and of yourself that you're going to keep pushing. You're going to keep promoting positivity. You're going to keep doing all that you can. And you may not win everybody, but if you can win a few, those are major victories considering the way that things could have been. And so I really do believe that what you throw out into the atmosphere is what you get back. I believe that life has a boomerang effect. If you're going to be positive, you're going to get positive back. If you're going to continually throw out negativity and doing harm, that's exactly what you're going to get back. So I believe that if you keep doing it and convince others to do it, that it will become a model and people will see it and they'll catch on and it'll spread like fire. That's just what I believe.
You were quoted, and we'll wrap here, but I mean, you were quoted in an article about the census numbers of Black community in Chicago leaving the area.
Right.
They're calling it the Black Exodus. We're seeing numbers. Each time a new study comes out, you see more and more African-Americans leaving the mm-hmm. Chicago area. Is this something that you're concerned about? I mean, is this something that you feel is A, normal or slash abnormal, B, reversible?
Yeah, I think it's reversible. That's the first thing. The second thing is that not only are we experiencing a Black Exodus, but in 2016, the state of Illinois led more people leaving than any other state in our union. So it's not just a problem that we have with Black people in Chicago. It's a problem that we have with our state. People are leaving our state. They're going to better places or what they call better places. And it just so happens that now the African-American community, the Black community, is feeling the effects of that as well. And they're, mm-hmm. when you couple that with a bad economic environment and you push, you see the violence that is happening, then it's causing people to say, hey, I got to go give my kids
a better opportunity. But Pastor, isn't that an alarming effect in the
yes.
way that if you're getting people to go block by block and you talk about Malcolm Gladwell and pushing and pushing yeah. and the tipping point, does it become harder to do that as people leave the fight? Or they say they don't want to be here anymore? I mean, does it make it harder to organize the masses for change?
Yeah. One of the saddest things is when you see people leaving, and you see people leaving your church, you see people leaving your community, you see abandoned houses that used to be full of love and a family living there, and now no one is living there. That's a sad picture, and that's a sad state. But I believe for those of us who choose to remain and choose to stay, we have to do the very best that we can do to make it an environment where people don't want to leave, and make it an environment where people want to come back. It's not the first time that Black people have experienced an exodus, and it won't be the last. But we have to do our job as citizens and do our job as individuals who live there to try to continue to make it a better place.
All right, my last question.
Absolutely.
Is Chicago better or worse than 20 years ago?
I would say that it is worse economically for black people. I think that even though you have a middle class that probably has expanded, you've seen impoverished numbers grow increasingly. You've seen the educational system becoming worse for African Americans. So I think the state for impoverished people and poor people is getting worse every single day. I think it's becoming more difficult in America for individuals to climb out of poverty. And that's a sad commentary when we live in such a great nation that has so many things available, so many intelligent people. We should not be a nation where people don't have an opportunity to climb out of poverty. But sadly to say, poverty is growing and it's increasing, and people are having a more difficult time climbing out.
Pastor Corey Brooks is the senior pastor of New Beginnings Church of Chicago. He's also the executive director of Project Hood. I can't thank you enough for coming in tonight
and sharing
your story.
I appreciate it.
And I can't wait to have you back.
You got to have me back. You got to have me back on.
You got it.
All right.
Good to have the pastor in here, Pastor Brooks. First time. You know, I believe I've booked him before as a producer, and I think other people have talked to him, but I never had a chance to have him here on the download. But great. You know, I always enjoy a perspective that defies the stereotype. What I mean is, like, there's just, and he even says, I mean, there's a lot in his community call him a sellout because he doesn't sort of get in line with the Democratic Party as an African-American minister or pastor, because the African-American community has always voted Democrat. But, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, when you really think about what politics is, you know, especially when you're trying to court communities, whether it be the business community or whether it be an ethnicity, there is this idea that if you vote this person into power, they will in turn turn around and give you policies, opportunities, whatever it might be legally. You know, it gives it back to win or go to spoils. That's the idea. That's politics. We know that. And I could understand the African-American community for years saying, where's ours? Wait a second. We went out in droves. I think there was a lot of probably a lot of disappointment in Barack Obama, President Obama, because there were issues. They thought, you know, we're going to come out in droves for this, so that we'll see some sort of response. And there wasn't as much for the African-American community as expected. But we've talked about that on the program, and we talk more. But it's interesting to have Pastor Brooks on talking those issues. A lot about equality, a lot about leadership things. And we'll just continue that conversation here on the download. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we shift gears. We go more entertainment. Night Jewel. This is amazing. She is blowing up. Indie pop star. You don't see a lot of this. You know, there's going to be people who love pop music, and they're going to be people who you just assume are going to be like Ariana Grande. But there are people that love 80s and 90s pop music, and they do it independently, meaning they fall into more of an indie rock or indie pop kind of vibe, and they play the circuit where they're going to be at Lincoln Hall or they're going to be at clubs, and they're playing traditional pop music. They're just not doing it for Kiss FM, if that makes sense, right? It's just a good song. And Night Jewel has put together a career, his second or third album now, where she is emulating 80s pop stars, Janet Jackson, Mariah Carey, then people like that. And there's a specific sound to Janet Jackson. Think about early Janet Jackson versus independent Janet Jackson when she was just whatever she put on the radio, you know, was gold, even though it sounded nothing like the last song. So we'll talk with Night Jewel about her career. Also coming up, Lola Bellatro back, Paul Thomas and the boys. They were on probably about a year ago. best alternative grunge, rock, country, soul, blues, jazz, soul. Did I say blues? Blues. Did I say grunge? Grunge. Rock. Did I say alternative? Acoustic. Trio.
Like
trio.
A musical burrito.
There you go. They nailed it. Musical burrito. The musical burrito. Lola Bellatro will be in studio. They got a show coming up on Saturday, so they'll be playing some new music tonight. the musical burrito. And then Greg Flamm will be back at 10 o'clock doing the swap meet. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNradio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio. Yes, musical burrito. You nailed it. You should get into marketing, Rob. On the side, you should you should market eclectic half-joke bands.
See, my problem is consistency. This stuff just kind of hits me, and then I got to blurt it out. So
you need to do – the best thing you can do for your creativity, Rob, is set a meeting at 2 o'clock every day in a conference room. We all get in there, and then we just start throwing things off the board. We just – you know, what do you got? Because there's nothing better than regimenting creativity. That's what I found throughout the years. So that really gets the juices flowing.
Yeah. Especially at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, 2 o'clock. We're getting some pot bellies in here. We'll just have a grand old time.
Yeah. I didn't order the tuna. I can't be creative. I got stuck with the tuna.
I got stuck with the tuna. That becomes the name of our new record, see? Let's work it out. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest is coming to First Ward Chop Shop in Wicker Park on July 19th. Chicago, make way for Night Jewel. Night Jewel, also known as Ramona Gonzalez, is a singer-songwriter from Los Angeles who's turned heads with her music, which draws from the R&B classics of the 80s and 90s like Janet Jackson or Mariah Carey, but it's presented with a sound just right for 2017. The new album, Real High, was released earlier this year, and like I said, she's coming to First Ward Chop Shop on the 19th of July. It is my pleasure to welcome Night Jewel to the Download. Night Jewel, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It's fun to read the reviews and listen to the music, and there always seems to be a throwback to that idea of this music being inspired by the R&B classics, like I mentioned, Janet Jackson, Mariah Carey. Do you see it that way? Is that similar to the story that you'd like to be presented?
I mean, I definitely was inspired by certain aspects of Janet Jackson's aura from the 90s, where she was kind of like losing herself in her femininity and her sexuality. But at the same time, she's like a tough girl. She's a tomboy. And I have to say, I've probably been inspired by her for every record that I've done. But I think you can just like hear it more now because I've sort of like taken away bits of fuzz and ambience that previously covered up those influences.
What I love about the music is, you know, this idea that it is inspired. You can hear the way that the music reflects that. But it also is very melancholy. It's very ambient in the way that it's something that sounds entirely different. And I wonder, when you talk about just the contrast of constantly people saying it's like Janet, or it's inspired by Janet Jackson, and then being able to produce the music that you do, how you like that contrast, how you like the idea of that being part of your music.
I mean, I'm extremely humbled by the fact that people think that it sounds like Janet. Those comparisons have been a little like crazy for me to even like think about because, I mean, she's one of my idols. I do think that the way that I speak is definitely a little bit more on the fringe than what Janet Jackson may have said in her albums. It is melancholy and it is a bit, there's a bit of like irony and winking that goes on throughout the album. But at the same time, like if you think about like a song like I Get Lonely From Velvet Rope, that album by Janet Jackson. Mm-hmm. That was like a big hit. You know, that song is about being a loner, and it's about being isolated, and it's about not being able to like connect with people because you're just like so singular and you're doing your own thing. And I really relate to that. I mean, as artists, I mean, I'm not an antisocial person, but as an artist, you really have to get into your own head and your own space to be inspired. And sometimes that can be a little bit like of a crazy place to be in, where you have melancholic thoughts.
Yeah.
It's natural.
It's funny because when you hear that an artist is inspired by Janet Jackson or Mariah Carey, you automatically think that, well, it's someone who wants to be a pop star, who wants to create, formulate sort of the, you know, the 3-minute track that's going to have a hook and is going to be played on Kiss FM, you know, that kind of thing. It's automatically where your brain goes to. You know, for you as an independent artist who is drawing, like you just mentioned, the inspiration to be able to connect with an artist on other levels rather than just the production of it. Talk about that. Talk about how, you know, you can be inspired by an artist but not necessarily have to sound like they're produced.
I feel like pop music at that time was incredibly experimental. I mean, if you think about That's the Way Love Goes, like that was like a sample break, you know, it had a really mellow chorus. It was almost like she was like doing spoken word and singing. It was a really risque topic, you know, and I think that she was constantly innovating through lots of different ways. And I really despise these like classifications that separate experimental cutting edge music from stuff that's like R&B and soul. I think it like seeks to degrade like people in those genres, R&B genres, saying that like, oh, they're not doing something that's experimental, but they are. And it's true. It's whether you want to hear that experimental side or whether you want to hear the pop side and what you do with it. And for me, I just always felt that music was incredibly innovative. Yeah. Maybe pop music is a little less innovative these days on certain levels.
I mean, that's a great way to put it. I mean, you think about when I talk about the R&B classics of the 80s and 90s, that there's an experimental legacy that's forgotten. You know, you automatically think about pop music and you say, well, it's going to be, like I just said, 3.5 minutes and here's the hook, here's the chorus. And it's going to be played 35,000 times on the radio. But there is something to be said that, you know, a lot of artists, Janet Jackson included, have done things that would, even in today's market, be considered experimental or independent.
Definitely. I mean, just the very fact that her albums are always like 100 songs and there's like crazy interludes and like some of the songs are really harsh and like almost unlistenable. You know, she's not trying to be like 100% palatable to anyone. That's why she always works with the same producers on every record, even with Unbreakable, her latest record, which I love. She's still working with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And, you know, she's just like, she's honored her style and her voice. And I just really respect that. I think that she's less of a cookie cutter example of a pop star. And I don't seek to be a pop star, but I can't help be influenced by stuff I grew up with. I mean, I've listened to these records like 70 billion times because when you were my age, you only got a few albums every few months, you know, like you got like maybe 3 or 4 CDs and you would just play them out. We didn't have access to like streaming, you know, so I've just listened to these records so many times that even if I didn't necessarily think about her when I was making the record, it just is in there. It's always going
to
be there.
As an artist, as you continue your career and you continue to make records, I mean, talked about Real High, this released earlier this year. How are you evolving when you think about, you know, some of the people we were just talking about, Janet Jackson, and how she's evolved and she's used experimental stuff and she continues to work with the same people. How in your career have you evolved as a musician to up to this point with Real High?
Well, it's been extremely circuitous, but nonetheless, I think that with this most recent album, Real High, I feel like it's become the most lyrically driven record that I've done.
Is that by design?
I'm not really sure what happened. I think just I was doing some sort of thing where I was making confessional music at the time. The songs that I was making when I first wrote the first song, Real High, in 2011, that's the title track. And I wrote that first song, it was a really confessional song. And it was so good. And it stuck with me from 2011 until when I started finishing the record. And I thought to myself, the whole record has to have this sort of feeling. And the feeling is lyric driven. And I had to like honor that moment, you know. Previously in my other albums, there were other things that I was more concerned about, whether it was, you know, certain kinds of like sonic palettes or confusing the listener or creating something extremely left field and innovative. on certain levels, but this record was really just about making songs that were very personal. And so that's kind of just where it went. And that's my development, not only as an artist, but kind of as a person too.
We're talking with Night Jewel. She's got the new album Real High, which just came out this year. She's gonna be at Wicker Park at the First Word Chop Shop on July 19th. When you talk about creating music, and even going back to 2011, but creating confessional music or personal music, is that a difficult thing to do, you know, as you start to work in that area and push towards telling the world more your story or more what's happening with you? There's part of that that's definitely, you know, about the art, but there's another that's about, you know, having to come to terms that people are going to listen and know more about your personal life. Is that a challenge as a singer-songwriter to really push yourself to be honest, to be real, to tell the truth in your music?
It's extremely difficult for me to be open in general as a person. So like my personality, like on the day-to-day basis, is I'm extremely like tough guy kind of personality. That's like what I am. I'm like a tough guy, right? I'm just like handling my business, never let anybody let you see you sweat and all that kind of stuff. So it's difficult for me in general to be very like open with people and tell them how I feel and be vulnerable. And Night Jewel is this area where I get to do that. And so it's extremely terrifying, not only to share it with people, but even to make it, you know? Yeah. But I think that's like what makes it good. It just, it's putting yourself on the line for the sake of a good song. And that's just what I tried to do.
You've produced music for years now, but I think about, you know, you were on Secretly Canadian and you moved to your own record label to produce, I think it's the last two pieces. Talk about the idea of producing your own music, and you just talked about this being personal and being confessional and having to deal with that fear of putting yourself out there, but also doing it on your own, in your own space, independently with your own record label.
Well, I'm crazy, so that's a fact. But you know what? Like, it's like I am being driven totally insane daily, on a daily basis, because I'm just doing everything, you know, like you're saying, the label, the music, the singing, the artwork, the photographs, blah, blah, blah. And it's totally maddening. However, like, I just am such a control freak. When I worked with other people, I just could not let them do anything. And so it's just for the best of everybody, you know? I think that Secretly and I were, like, in, like, a very, like, toxic relationship, you know? We were just, like, the power dynamic could never seem to, like, work itself out, basically, right? You know? And like any relationship, it's like sometimes you stay in a relationship for like 20 years and you just like end up hating each other, or you just like get out of it and you live on your own. And it's really scary to be on your own and everything, but it's better than just, you know, drudging through this like kind of thing. And I just chose that path and I'm pretty good at it. I mean, I'm excited to have a label and I'm excited to release more music from not only myself, but from new artists as well. And I love discovering new music and I love supporting independent musicians. So I just hope to do more of that.
I mean, was that the goal? I mean, as an artist, as you've moved throughout, you know, a music career, was the goal to at some point or another have your own space to not only do your music, but to help others?
I feel like I have a nose for good new music. I DJ a lot. I'm a collector. I love to discover new bands on college radio or whatever, like in the store. And so it's exciting for me to think of the prospect of supporting new artists. I want to focus on female artists too, and female electronic producers. You know, the best ones out there are already being snatched up by like bigger labels, but I'm holding out for something really special.
It's great to be in Los Angeles, and I think about you being in that town with the remnants of the giant music industry, and you think about all the artists that moved to Los Angeles to get the attention of record labels and make their way. You know, for you, yeah, to be in that town, to be where the music industry once was giant, but also be a part of an independent scene in Los Angeles, for artists that come out there now in Los Angeles, it's much more about being a part of the LA music scene as it is, you know, trying to get Elektra Records or whatever record company to come out to your show.
It's both. That's the funny thing about Los Angeles. It's real split down the middle. In some cases, there's people coming here and they want to get signed, you know, and they make no bones about it. And then there's other people who want to be part of an artistic community. And the success of both or either really depends on how good the art is and like kind of nepotism and stuff like that. But I moved out to LA to join an artistic community. That's exactly why I moved. And I took a big risk and I just like packed everything into a pickup truck and I just drove to Los Angeles because I thought this is where the best art is being made. And you have to trust your instincts about that. I think that I made a really good decision. I was surrounded by such incredible music and art, and I would never trade it in for the world. I mean, I think that in a way, I was chasing that same like bright shining light of Hollywood in a really funny kind of unique way. And I think everyone should do it. I mean, LA is an incredible place. There's just really amazing art being made here.
Night Jewel's going to be at the First Ward Chop Shop in Wicker Park on July 19th. The new album, which came out earlier this year, is called Real High. Night Jewel, thanks for taking some time out to talk to us now. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. We talk all the time, but nothing gets done. The work begins with the setting of the sun. They advise me how to play, how to look that way. See, life goes on and on and on and on and on. On.
That's the story of the first half of the 2017 Chicago Cubs. You know, like they glossy, real nice, real crisp. A lot of really action shots of that one series where they beat the Cardinals. Or, well, they split the series, but that's really what I'm looking for. Or the documentary. Where the documentary producers who made all the World Series stuff, can they make the first half of 2017 Cubs video as well?
I was at the game yesterday, and on the video screen, they show a lot of highlight packages. And I kept on looking. I'm like, was that this year, or are they sneaking in last year's?
They're sneaking it in.
I couldn't tell.
Really, it looks really cold.
I'm like, there's John Jay, but I think they like to put a mustache on him to hide him. I don't know. It seemed weird. It was weird.
I thought Wade Davis was white, but he's just black with a tattoo all over his neck. Looks just like Aroldis Chapman. Yeah, not a great start for the Cubs, but I digress. It's only the first half. And to be three, it's funny because they're three games back. That's not good. Like, I've been making jokes in the carryout at the beginning of the show for the last 2 weeks. Well, they're only a game back. Then after this 4th of July holiday, it became three games back. You know, a loss tomorrow, talking four games back. Then you start getting into, I mean, think about it this way. The Sox, I think, are 5.5 back in the wild card. So when you get to 5.5 back in this day and age in baseball, you go. You might as well be, you're rebuilding at that point. Yeah, that would be, that'd be so Cub for them to not be able to get back to the playoffs the next year. But hey, they won a championship. What can you do? It's all good, right? And there's no Jay Cutler to distract us or to be distract. Like last year, there was so much said about no one paid attention to the Bears until December, thanks to the Cubs. November maybe. You know, it's like we were watching the World Series. No one cared.
Like 2 months.
They were 0-5 or whatever they start. You're like, I don't care. I don't care. Who cares, Jay Cutler? And now maybe we can pay attention because
Mike Glennon.
Mike Glennon could be a Cubs fan's distraction down the stretch. Mm. I had a lot of fun this weekend. I got to play tour guide. My friends of mine from New York came in.
Nice.
Yeah, so I got to be, like, we went downtown, I think it was Monday. we went downtown and I did the river walk and I walked past here, tried to explain the Lincoln statue. It's right here.
How did you explain it? Because I still don't know what it is.
I don't know, man. It's public art. You know, what do you want to say? You know, I don't know what it means. So we went down to Millennium Park and we were all over. We had deep dish pizza, Chino's.
Right. Oh, man.
Really
nice.
Yeah. And the best part was, by far for me, was noticing all of the, like, how much of a maze and how difficult Michigan Avenue is. Because of all the people who try to stop you to sell you stuff. I don't know if you've noticed this, but Michigan Avenue has become a, like a what do you call it? Like a, not a maze, but a, what was the David Bowie movie? Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
Labyrinth of people selling newfangled stuff.
Yeah, it's, you know, you have your, you know, your regular peddlers, of course, and right. then you have, yeah, your, hey, have you heard about Fresh Goods?
Yeah, those
people.
Guys, and they're in numbers. They've got numbers, and there's all sorts of new companies that are like, our business plan is to just hire people at $6 an hour to bother people on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, we were just talking about that because we ran into this same type of thing, and I'm like, is this a proven value for the business?
I want to do an investigative report where I go, is this part of the business plan? Is this marketing? Someone bring in their marketing plan to this company and be like, no billboards. That's yesterday's news. Besides a bus, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's the best thing to do? Bother them on Michigan Avenue. I mean, I was accosted, I would say, six times. Because you're a little bit slower with the families and, you know,
yeah,
like
sure.
there's kids. So it was like, I was a little bit more like when I'm walking on Michigan Avenue to come to work, I got headphones on and I don't even see it. It's like, I want to get to work and start researching. That's what I'm going to get. But with this, I just felt like I was kind of a sitting duck in the way. But I was accosted like 10 times. I was like, no, I don't want any.
Yeah, when the person, I think, is it Fresh Goods? Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah. And they came up to me and like, hey, have you heard about Fresh Goods? And I've said, yes, love it. Use it all the time. Go. Oh,
well, that's
thank
a good
you.
Idea. Just buy into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No need to stop. Just like you're friendly.
Right. I give him a look and maybe a wink with a smile and I go, no way. I'm not stopping.
Because there's, I mean, you look down at your phone, but you don't want, you know, you don't want to look down. You kind of pretend like, oh, you're looking at something up in the sky so they don't make, you know, because you got to avoid eye contact because as soon as they, like, get right to your eyes, they're talking to you.
And my last point on this is that there's always the guy who will also be out there, like, selling his homemade rap CD. You know, there's the guys selling their hip-hop CDs. And should I feel offended that they don't offer me one? You know, there's been a couple times where I'm like, they're like, this guy. No, not this guy. With his polo, this bald white guy. He's not the demographic.
Oh, my God.
I get that vibe. Like, same thing at, like, party flyers when everyone's got a party. You know, I just feel like I'll be walking to Wicker Park and they'll have, like, a flyer for a party and they just kind of pull it back when I walk
by. We don't want to waste this one.
I'm like, oh, man, come on, man.
Oh, man, you're getting targeted or
untargeted.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Well, not these next guys, Lola Bellatro. They'll hand me a ton of flyers. I'm right up their alley. I am their demographic.
But think about it though, like you're a tastemaker.
I know.
In the city. If they only knew,
and Rob Martier knows this, how many times I'm in the club on a Saturday night. Bottle service in the back.
Sam's Club.
Yeah, it's Sam's Club, right.
Sam's Club. Get the big pumpkin pie. It's like the size of a wheel.
See, I'm the guy who brings the Sam's Club pumpkin pie to the club.
Right.
I do that. I go one step further. All right, Lola Bellatro next up in live in studio. The band's back in studio. Yes, we got some good songs coming up here. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Greg Flam's here. We're going to play at Swap Meet 312-981-7200. It's where we evaluate your junk. It's a simple concept. All the stuff in your attic, your basement. We evaluate it. You call up. Maybe got some garbage that you're thinking about throwing out at the 4th of July. Before you do that, check with Greg. Never know. It could be worth a couple hundred bucks. That's what we'll do here coming up at 10 o'clock. 312-981-7200 here on The Download. Well, in studio tonight, Lola Bellatro back. Back in studio for the second time. They are Chicago's preeminent alternative, grunge, acoustic, rock.
Are you doing a series here, Justin, since you had Jimmy Chamberlain on last week?
Yeah, you guys are blues, soul, you got a little soul, country, Americana. Yeah. You guys are a little bit Americana.
Yeah. There's a lot of America in us.
There's a lot of America.
Slices.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, anyway, they're preeminent. I would say they're preeminent.
That's fair.
I think that's a fair...
Preeminent domain.
It's a good start.
It's a great... Lola Bellatro is a band of ragtag musicians who moonlight as comedians. Paul Thomas, Jeff Madden, and Cork Kangas in studio. They're back on stage this weekend, Saturday night at the Whip Theater, 6670 Northwest Highway in Edison Park. Guys, good to see you guys, man.
Great to see you,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for having
you guys us. You guys are as somber as I remember.
Yeah, we summer we loosen up a little bit because you have to. It's Chicago summer, but come on, you know.
We like to think of ourselves as dour.
Dour is probably the functional word.
I think that's how I was thinking, dour, right?
Yeah, every new group nowadays, you can't, you know, with social media, it's hard to be dour. Because you got a hash, there's nothing dour about a hashtag.
Right.
You know?
Hashtag dour.
Mystique. I mean, you could say, hashtag mystique gone of rock.
Yeah.
You know? Can you imagine Cobain's Instagram posts and Facebook when he's 14 years old? He just, you know, it would be sad. You'd be like, this guy's mysterious. Then you look at his posts and... This is garbage. You know? He was still a 14-year-old with 14-year-old thoughts. He wasn't...
Right. You know. Doing Instagram pictures.
That
of like,
said, Smells Like Teen Spirit lyrics were probably kept intact.
Yeah. Are you guys mad you're not playing Taste of Chicago? I thought I'd see you guys on the Taste of Chicago bill.
We haven't done a lot of festival work.
There's children there.
Yeah.
That's, you know, limits us a little bit.
Yeah.
That, you know, but...
Putting us out in the open air isn't always the best idea. I don't think people...
That said, a couple years ago, we were at Navy Pier.
We did do Navy Pier.
People stopped. Yeah. People watched. People stopped. People watched.
They were a little confused sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we opened for a Who tribute band, as I recall.
That's true.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, knowing you guys, you know, are the grandfathers, the granddaddies of Chicago grunge, alternative, Americana.
Yeah.
I said grunge. Grunge. It just feels like you guys should be more celebrated. You know, I just don't think that sometimes you get the notice that a Lola Bellatro really deserves.
That's definitely a fact.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to sit here and argue with that.
Yeah. I mean, there's enough debates going on in the world right now where we were trying to argue that, and then, you know, election happens, and then we just kind of had to back off that debate because it just fell down to 7th or 8th rung for people. Yeah. So we're just dealing with what we got. You know, and just sitting. We've been on the sidelines for a while, and that's just fine. You know, you get your moment in the sun, you take advantage of it. And this is one of those moments.
All right, so you guys can play some live music. Yeah, I mean, obviously you're here, so what are we going to hear here? I mean,
it's a song off of our CD.
Yeah.
That same CD.
The same CD.
Yeah, our CD.
Part of it is when you get more money, you can make another CD when you're, you know.
The CD.
I just figured, you know.
That's the most Americana way to do it.
People can now make music, you know, mixing in their bedroom. It's just surprising you guys stick with that one CD year after year, that same CD.
Yeah, you know, when you're paying off that one CD.
Yeah, we put a lot of money into that.
A lot of money into that back in the day when people had CDs. Right. You know, you kind of have.
And you ordered a lot of them. That
was a lot.
That was a mistake.
We couldn't have looked far off ahead into the future to see a time 4 or 5 years ago later where no one would care about CDs. Right. That's the case now, though. Yeah. So,
and even coasters. People are using coasters less just because they're more careless.
I love about a Lola Bellatro CD is it still comes with the long rectangular sort of packaging.
Sure it does.
The long box?
The long box. That's what's great about a Lola Bellatro CD.
Yeah, that's going way back to like early 90s before they you know, cared about being green with CD covers.
But I like that you brought that back. That was strong.
Yeah. Thank you.
Lola Bellatro in studio, of course, the Paul Thomas, Jeff Madden, Cork Kangas, ragtag musicians who sometimes do comedy. But here they are right now, live on the Download. They're going to be on stage Saturday night at the Whip, 6670 Northwest Highway in Edison Park. Take it away, guys.
Pressure's on and getting higher. situation getting dire. Time is short and slowly fading. Cannot keep the people waiting. 11th hour, it has come. Can we do what must be done? We gotta name that panda. Name that panda. Name that panda. Name that panda. Quickly now the cub is weaning. Which direction are we leaning? Possibilities are plenty. Narrow down the list to 20. This committee is so large that makes a consensus hard. We gotta name that panda. Name that panda. Name that panda. Name that panda. It's gotta be original. It's gotta be rare. It's gotta be indicative of the personality of this bear. It's gotta be original.
Original.
It's gotta be rare. It's gotta be indicative of the personality of this.
Chun-Li!
That one's taken. It means victory.
Ooh-she!
That means fighter. Sounds too aggressive to me.
Chi-Hui!
That's not bad. Put it in the maybe bin.
Shundahushi.
Breath of God. Let's stay away from religion. Beautiful flower. But this cub is a male. It means wise soul. It's a panda, not a whale. It means love. I can sort of see it on a hat. That means murder. No, we can't name this bear that. It's gotta be original.
Original.
It's gotta be rare. It's gotta be indicative of the personality of this.
Yeah. There you go. Lola Balatro. Did people outside like it, huh? You guys like it? There you go. They love it.
And why wouldn't they?
There you go. That's the old microphone for the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's real strong. Lola Balatro in studio. The band, which is Paul Thomas, Jeff Madden, and Cork Kangas, talking about the Panda Bear. They will be on stage this weekend, Saturday night, at the Whip Theater, 6670 Northwest Highway in Edison Park. All right, let's take a break. And then we'll come back. We got to hear some. I mean, we'll hear other songs off the CD.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing about you guys. It's the one CD, no new music. It's just the same four.
We got new tunes. It's all deep cuts this weekend at the Whip.
Oh, it is.
Oh yeah, not all deep cuts. It's the CD.
It's just going to be playing instead of
playing. We're playing an hour and a half, Justin Kaufman.
So what happens? Do you start to just repeat? Do different alternate takes?
No, we have. That's funny you said that, because we have done that before when we've had a three-hour set, but I think any band might be guilty of that if you're playing at a bar.
Right.
But no, this is we got a lot of deep cuts and new cuts, too.
New cuts?
Yeah, and this next time we're here, we'll play new cuts.
Oh, wow, that would be great. Still,
yeah.
All right.
We weren't ready for them.
New cuts, and also, again, you have most of your audience is children.
That's true, they are children.
Children and
we can't do 98% of our songs
on the radio.
Children and Amish.
Or on radio stage.
Or on stage.
Certainly not at a festival.
Yeah.
All right, Lola Bellatro in studio. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Lola Bellatro in studio tonight, the original grunge, acoustic, rock, alternative.
I think you added Americana in there.
Americana.
I think we're digging that.
Yeah, we like that.
Soul, alt rock.
Probably soul.
You do alt country? No?
Probably not country.
Alt country?
We'll take Johnny Cash country.
Yeah, that's
outlaws.
Yeah, kind of out scoff law, as it were. We scoff at the law.
Scoff law. Scoff law country. Scoff
law, it's kind of scoff law, right?
Yeah. Lola Bellatro is going to be on stage at the Whip Theater, 6670 Northwest Highway in Edison Park this Saturday night. Paul Thomas, Jeff Madden, Cork Kangas in studio. You guys, you know, as I mentioned earlier at the top, I mean, it's tremendous that you guys are having success playing places like the Whip and people still remember Lola Bellatro, but. Yeah. You know, I just feel like there should be more, I guess just more publicity to the fact that you guys essentially started grunge and nobody knows. Nobody pays attention to it. They give it all to Nirvana and Pearl Jam.
They give it a lot to Neil Young. You know, yeah, he played a lot. But, I mean, he could be the godfather of, you know, anything. Yeah. I mean, he's got video game music in the 80s practically, you know.
That is true.
So,
but I mean, does it bother you guys that the grunge movement they put these guys up in museums and other places and you guys are kind of forgotten? You're kind of like you don't sell, the one CD doesn't sell, like you don't get booked. I mean, you guys are kind of down and out. You don't make money.
Yes, it does. It bothers us quite a bit, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we try not to say a whole lot about it or talk too much about it. We're still,
it hurts. You can say artists. We don't, you know, at this point, what's art? What is it? You know?
And I don't want to get, I mean, there's a flip side, and that's the fact that, you know, art is, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But let's stay on the other side and just continue to talk about the low points. I mean, you guys have had a lot of low points. You have been low. You continue to be low. At present day, I'm just as an old fan of yours. I mean, you don't take care of yourselves. I mean, you seem like you're kind of at death's door in a way. I mean, where do you see Lola Bellatro going next?
Well, it's funny you say at death's door. I mean, look at Lemmy, right? I mean, he was 70, and he has no excuse for being 70. You know, when he died, and I saw a headline just yesterday. Look, I was just doing it back in Lemmy research because you look to people like Lemmy to go, hey, he was doing it till he could just get carted on stage and he died playing a video game. That's a separate thing. But he, you know, one of the headlines from some British papers like died too soon. You're like, this guy just pumped himself. He couldn't even get a blood transfusion because his veins were so messed up. You know, Lemmy.
Is that what you're looking towards? I mean,
at this point, you just know at some point you got to preserve your body, and I think that's through.
Yeah, and I don't know if we're necessarily at death's door, circling the block, maybe looking for a parking spot.
I'm just quoting what people write about you guys. It's not my personal opinion, but it's just
we don't read.
We don't think
the whole
that. I mean, when you bring it up here like this in the moment, I mean, we probably have to reevaluate after this, but you know, you just keep your pedal under your foot. You keep the pedal under your foot is what you do.
Well, we're going to hear another song here before we let you guys go. You're going to be at the Whip Theater for essentially, I guess this is a comeback tour in a way that you're playing?
It's every show. Jeff,
our whole career is a comeback tour.
Yeah.
We started as a comeback.
It's a good way to look at it. Yeah. 6670 Northwest Highway in Edison Park. You know, before, this is another, of course it is. It's another one from the CD, the one CD you guys put out.
Yeah.
But this is a deeper cut. This is not one that you don't go. This isn't like top three.
It's up there.
I tell you what. Just and for the record, we had this song out before Miley Cyrus had her song out, and Bruce Springsteen has his album out.
Yes.
So both.
Well, you'll figure. Yeah. Once
before both of them.
Both of them put out
their respective
things with this same title.
Right. It's a whole different time.
Right.
Period.
Yeah. So they, I mean, you didn't. So it's a just.
You guys did it.
It's a title of a song, but I'm just saying, right. If you go on iTunes or Spotify or Pandora and you put in this song title, we will show up with Miley Cyrus and Bruce Springsteen, but ours did predate them. Yep. So that's solid rock FYI.
Oh, I didn't know that. Save it for behind the music. Lola Bellatro, ragtag musicians, Paul Thomas, Jeff Madden, Cork Kangas. They're going to be at the Whip, 6670 Northwest Highway, Edison Park on Saturday night. Here they are. Do you want to name this track or just let us?
We'll
just
you'll get it soon enough.
There we go. Lola Bellatro.
As far as I can tell, and you'd like to get to know me well. There is a special thing that should be known. My jewel pouch only has one stone. Let me introduce you to jubilation.
Hello, say hello.
Like a ton of bricks upside your head, I'll bust you up with my ball of lead. I'm gonna show you what it's all about.
I'll lay you down and I'll lay you out.
You're going to witness something special.
Oh, 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 yes you will.
Wrecking ball,
wrecking ball. Oh, oh, oh,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball. Oh, oh, oh,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball.
Oh, oh, wrecking ball,
wrecking ball. Oh, oh,
deadly precision I never miss. It's a force to be reckoned with. My aim is true and I will not fail. Going off the charts on the Richter scale. I'll show you the meaning of ecstasy.
Whoa, whoa, yes I will.
Like a Picasso, I am never dull. Asymmetrical yet beautiful. There won't be any time to explain when I'm
wreaking havoc like a hurricane.
I'll take you higher than you've ever been.
Whoa, whoa, yes I will.
Wrecking ball,
wrecking ball.
Oh, oh, oh.
Wrecking ball,
wrecking ball.
Oh, oh, wrecking.
Wrecking ball,
oh, oh, wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
the feelings that you will feel,
oh, oh, oh,
will be completely unreal,
oh, oh, oh,
to follow bliss, just follow me. That I have to tell. I've got one, but I use it well. And I dare you not to look surprised at the demolition between your thighs. You'll think that you've died and gone to heaven.
Say goodbye.
Wrecking ball.
Wrecking ball.
Oh, oh.
Wrecking ball.
Wrecking ball.
Oh, oh.
Wrecking ball.
Wrecking ball.
Oh, oh.
Wrecking ball.
Wrecking ball.
Here come the wrecking ball.
Wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball.
Here come the wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball.
Here come the wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
swinging to and fro,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball.
Wrecking ball,
oh, oh, look out down below.
Wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
here we go.
Wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
wrecking ball,
oh, oh,
lay down for the show. Here comes the wrecking ball.
Oh, there we go. How about that? Let's get some clapping out there in the street, yeah? Yeah, it's about normal for a Lola Bellatro crowd right there.
Some of them are just learning. There's a lot of kids out there, you know.
Yeah,
and it's deep. Need to know.
Well, it just seems normal. I mean, you guys have played so many shows in your career where, you know, people just don't respond. I'm assuming that a lot of, you know, no clapping, things like that. But so it's great to get at least some respect out here on Michigan Avenue. Lola Bellatro, one of Chicago's historic, I mean, dinosaur historic, you know, prehistoric, I would say. Grunge, alt-rock, Americano trio.
Yeah, Americano Trio. That's a hashtag. Can we use that?
Lola Bellatro, the group of ragtag musicians, who also moonlight as comedians. Paul Thomas, Jeff Madden, Cork Kangas, they're on stage at the Whip Theater, 6670 Northwest Highway in Edison Park this Saturday. Guys, I'm not disappointed. I love the segment. I thought it was great. It's just I thought it was new music, and to find out it's from the same CD, again, it's the second time you've been on, and both times you said it was new music, and it's from the original CD. It's a little bait and switch. Yeah. That's all. I'm just saying, next time you come on.
Thanks for throwing us a bone.
I'd love to have you on. It's just, yeah. You know, maybe something from new music in some form.
You have to make a CD? You need.
I'm just saying, like, maybe.
That's all we do with CDs. We can't make digital.
Yeah, it's just, well, thanks for being here, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Welcome.
It's time for swap meet. Oh yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for swap meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flam.
Here I am.
There he is. It's a download. 720 WGN in studio. Greg Flam at DuPage Picker, Facebook and Twitter. This is the segment we do every Wednesday night where we evaluate your junk.
Yes.
Sounds gross.
Yeah.
Whether it's in the attic, the basement, hanging out in the wall right in front, a party started. What do you want to brag about? 312-981-7200. This segment, of course, brought to you by Wolf's Flea Market. 312-981-7200. How are you, Greg?
I'm awesome. Great weekend selling and picking, and it's always awesome with Wolf's out in Rosemont.
So this is prime time. There's 4th yep. of July weekend. I mean, there's something special about garage
sales?
And
from here to Labor Day, I mean, it's like every day there'll be garage sales. Monday, Tuesday, it doesn't matter. It's every day now. So keep your eyes open. I break for garage sales. Got the bumper sticker on the back of my car. So
do you really have that? No, come on.
No, but I will, and I've hit the brakes kind of hard to find a garage sale.
All right, what do you got tonight?
Okay,
what'd you bring in?
I kept our weekly Bears poster. I'll get to that in a second.
Thing.
But I brought in Kasingles, so we can revisit that.
You're the best, Greg. All right, first let's look at this poster.
Sure.
So this is a world champ Chicago Bears poster.
Super Bowl 20.
We need to get a better look at this. Okay, so it's it's just huge.
Yeah, and this was an Amoco. Promo, and this would probably be in the top four as far as Super Bowl 20 posters.
Really?
As far as one of the higher
because
price
it's
ones.
Like all action
it's like
shots
a
or something.
30-40. Yeah. Well, mostly because you find the score is the big right. thing, and they want that Super Bowl 20 logo. So any poster
the
that
Bears
has that
one, we got
Super
it.
Bowl 20, yeah, and they'll be living off that forever.
Yeah,
so,
right.
but yeah, it's got the score. But what I love is God bless Walter, but he's got this look on him like. I can't believe I'm not going to score a touchdown in this game.
They got an
and
action
Fridge
shot.
Will, you know.
Yeah. They got an action shot of him looking angry.
Yeah.
They got
the look he's got.
Dent down on the bottom there in the robe.
Yeah.
And you got, this is a very weird.
You got Bob Costas here with, presenting Richard Dent, MVP. But what's great is he's got some stats here from the playoffs and from the game. You know, it's a really nice collage type poster.
I love
it's not just one thing.
All right.
But yeah,
what
it's in the top
got?
Four.
What else you got?
I picked this weekend the old Mattel electronics basketball. Kind of common, but, 1977 is the first version. They reissued them. 2002, they're not as worth as much, but the 77 and 78 versions are the ones you want. I brought in the WGN Chicago Cubs promo. For it's
a radio. Right.
And I'm going to fix this and give this to my buddy Pete back there. Because I know he's the Cubs fan. But the battery thing is broken, but I know how to fix it, so I'm going to fix that and give that to him. But,
it's
got
awesome.
The 720 WGN logo. It was a promo, I'm sure, at the park. And then, of course, I brought in a stack of Kasingles because we didn't have any.
What do you got?
All right, I've got Aerosmith, Love and Elevator.
Two guitar solos on that song, by the way.
Right,
go ahead.
Yeah.
What else you got?
B-52's Love Shack,
okay.
Metallica, Enter Sandman, Motley right. Crue, Dr. Feelgood.
Oh, yeah.
Green Jello, Three Little Pigs, which is probably one of the more valuable ones of the stack. And then I've got an actual sampler. It was a promo from BMG Records back in the day of, 20 different artists that they
on one casingle?
On one, on this one casingle. Yeah, Annie Lennox, all kinds of. What's rare about
you
it?
You get 20 songs on a casingle?
It's got
the technology.
Probably
in that 12
to 15 anyway. Yeah, I exaggerate. But yeah, the probably the most expensive one I know was Love Shack by B-52. I was surprised. I thought that'd be, they sold a million, they wouldn't be that high, but that's like a $7 casingle. The other ones are like $3 to $7. So here's what casingles look like. And. Yeah, so you
here's
know,
what kids singles look
well,
like.
Well, we got a nice
you
audience
show people in the window.
Yep.
And you're like, let me show you kids. Have you ever seen a kids single before? Let me show you.
Does anyone know? This gentleman has to know.
Yeah.
The younger people don't know.
All right. So we got some good stuff. We got some good stuff.
Yeah, it was a good, like I said, good week, good selling, good weather. This weekend looked pretty good. Early on, it will be good weather.
All right. Well,
Sunday.
Let's get to the phones. Let's see what we got here.
Yep.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Because we're getting a lot of stuff already. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Claudette. Claudette, what do you want to brag about, Claudette?
Oh, I don't want to brag, but I had a question. I have a poster. It's a Janis Joplin poster. Mm-hmm. The artist is Jay-Z Lynch.
Okay.
And it was at the Auditorium Theater. And I was wondering, is there a market for posters?
Yes, especially concert
how are
posters.
You, how are you not bragging about that, Claudette? You just threw out that you had a Janis Joplin from the Auditorium.
It was, I didn't see her. It was given to me a long, long time ago when I was a teenager. And I did see it on the internet that somebody was offering at one time $5,000 for
it. Yeah, some of those concert posters from the 60s, 70s, they were more like 11 by 17 size or something
right.
like that. Those, you have to be careful because they're reproducing those, and they can be, you know, as cheap as $3 or $5, but they look just like, you know, the real ones that can be worth, like you said, thousands of dollars, so you have to be careful. But, yeah, if you know you've had it that long, then you you have an original, and I'm sure that's going to be worth easily, I'd say, $300 to $500 to start, and it might even be worth more than that. Because obviously it's so rare that I can't find one on here because it's not common.
Mm-hmm. Where do you go to try to sell something like that?
That you could probably sell online and get the most money. I would just set up an account or have a family member who sells and just do an auction. Make sure they start it at the price that you're willing to. If you only get one bid, make sure you set that price. Because if you can start it at a penny, and you might have to sell for a penny if you don't set that reserve.
Yeah. Thanks, Claudette.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right. More importantly, I'm like Janis Joplin at the Auditorium Theater.
Yeah.
So that's a huge space. I mean, it's thousands of people in that
auditorium,
right?
I mean,
does that? Am I wrong in the number? But, I mean, you're talking thousands, right? It's like one of the bigger spaces in the city.
I'm going to guess 4,000 or 5,000 easily.
And so the idea, I mean, I'm not saying she wasn't popular, but, I think of that time, and I think of them playing at the Aragon, maybe not the Aragon, but Electric Banana or whatever it was called at the time. But,
International Amphitheater.
Yeah, or playing like clubs as opposed to thousands, 5,000. That's a huge, more than 5,000. I want to say it's like up in the 10s.
I saw REM there not too long ago, and it was good. It's an awesome venue to see anybody.
No big deal, Greg. Look at you dropping the REM.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
312-981-7200. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. Come back. I got some people on the line. Paul, stay where you're at. Also got some texts that are in. We'll get to all of it. Greg Flamm is here at DuPage Picker. We're playing the swap meet. Stay with us. Coming off a holiday, like the 4th of July holiday, and having come back on a Wednesday, it feels like a Monday.
It does.
But I'm glad it's Wednesday because it's swap meet time, 312-981-7200, and Greg Flamm in the building at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. We are evaluating your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk.
Yes.
Like I said, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Paul. Paul, what do you want to brag about, bud?
Well, I got a couple dozen silver dollars. Good shape. 1880,
1920,
something like that.
Oh, 1880.
Wow. It's kind of out of my wheelhouse.
Coins like that, I mean, I feel very ignorant in saying this, but do they appreciate in that way where if you got a coin for a silver dollar from 1920, it's worth more than a dollar?
I would say it's condition, how you kept it.
Like if it's a mint kind of. Yeah. Are they in any sort of velvet, Paul?
No. I used to be a Tribune carrier as a kid, and they got $5 a week, and they paid us in cash once a week,
what?
A little envelope.
Wow. This is a real deal.
In a drawer.
Wow.
If you were, Paul, If you were my dad, you know what would have happened? I would have snuck in and taken those and taken a ride up to the arcade.
Yeah. All right.
You'd be mad at me right now because I guarantee my dad had cool coins like that. And I'd be like, hey, Dad. And come in and like, I'd be like, I'm going to go get a cupcake from the village market.
Yeah, it looks like
that, that was big bucks back in 1950. I thought I'd arrived.
Yeah, I'd have to say they're probably between $50 and $100, depending on the condition. They might be worth more if they're like awesome condition.
No, they're real nice shape, but they're just a pocket change, you know.
Yeah,
hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for listening.
There you go. Yeah. That's awesome, man. That's what I'm talking about right there. Right there. That's how you do it.
Right. You can always look at the side and see how much was silver. That's how I kind of look. If you're looking through change, like with quarters or half dollars, silver dollars, just, you know, kind of look at the side. You can kind of see the amount of silver.
630 says coins are all about condition.
Mm-hmm.
Some are can go for thousands of
dollars. It's all about the condition. It's also where they were minted, things like that. Yeah. So,
all right, let's keep going. Let's go to Ken. Ken, what do you want to brag about, Ken?
Hey, guys, love the segment.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay, so what I hear is pretty large. My father, back in the day, we have a family business, bought two World War II Army generators with the little four-cylinder motor that runs it. It's 12 kV, which is about 80 amps. But the interesting thing is I have the manual, the original manual for those Army generators.
Wow. There was no manual, and you have one?
He has the manual. But
No, it came with it.
And you have the generator as well as the manual?
Yeah, and it's a working generator.
Wow. Can you throw that model number at me again?
It's a 12 kV generator, which turns out to be about 60 to 80 amps.
Sure. Yeah, that is so rare, I doubt I'm going to be able to find
that. Yeah, but where'd you get those?
We bought it from another greenhouse.
Wow.
We have a family greenhouse, so we use it as backup generation.
Wow.
That is an awesome item, and I would love for you to shoot me a photo so I can research that a little bit better for you.
Yeah, there you go.
It's just going to take a little bit too long.
Okay.
I appreciate that, though. That's awesome, though. And the fact you have a manual, the manual alone is probably a few hundred dollars just for that if you were to sell that.
There you go. All right, well, that's cool. It's cool you got it. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. 312-981-7200. Playing swap meet. All right. 224 says, I have a Crest Sparkle Man telephone in the box.
Yep.
Circa 1987, which was a promo item for Procter & Gamble given to dentists.
Yes.
Last I saw years ago, it was over 75.
Yeah, I'm...
What does that mean, over $75?
Yeah, over 75. I'm finding a handful of them on there between 15 and 25. 15 if they're open, 25 still in the box. And there's probably about four or five currently listed.
I wonder how many, like, that's what's going to be on you know, sites and eBay and whatever. It's just promo items that are given to doctors and dentists.
Right. Promo items in general are awesome because they keep a lot of value and they weren't, you know, mass produced.
Except today it's not product. It's just pharmaceutical companies giving them lunch. So it's leftover guacamole and chips.
Right.
From when pharmaceutical company paid for our lunch.
Yeah, memories from strolling down the hall to the next patient.
Right. Exactly. All right. How about this one? A Longa Burger.
Okay.
Commemorative barn raising basket. What is that? With tags?
Yep.
And basket liner, still packaged circa 1998.
Yeah, I'm finding a few of those.
Explain what that is.
It looks kind of like an Easter basket is what I'm finding. But if he still has the tags on it, that could raise the price. Some of the more used ones, I'm finding $25 to $50. So you can start there and just make sure you do an auction. And
that's kind of cool.
I always recommend doing an auction for three times. So if it's a five-day auction, do that three times. Because I've got stories I could tell you on that third time, two guys got in a bidding war and bid up. A dollar belt buckle that I got bid up to $215, but I had to relist it as an auction
three
times.
What world do you live in, man? Where that's happening?
I am, yeah,
that's crazy.
I'm in that world. You know,
it's a world.
It is.
All right, let's 773's got a great question. Does a 10-year-old item count? I still have an original first generation iPhone.
Yes.
Will those be worth anything one day?
Yes. Anything Apple is just going to go up in value, especially for the next 10, 20 years. I sold a first-generation iPod. I think it was for $150. And this was in the bottom of a bin at a garage sale, all scratched up. Somehow people are able to pull some parts out of it and use it. Some people are collecting them. I know I sold my U2 iPod when that died. It was a dead battery in there, and I still sold it for, I think, $110, $120. I saved the box from it and everything and still got, you know, almost what I paid for it.
Wow. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Joe. Joe, what do you want to brag about, Joe?
Hey, guys. I collect a lot of swizzle sticks. I hope you don't think I've got a problem.
Oh, no. You're after my heart, man. I have so many swizzle sticks. Go on. Tell me what you got.
Gotcha. Two I'll key on because I don't want to waste too much of your time. First is Como Inn.
Okay.
Reputed to be one of Al Capone's favorite hideouts, if you will. And the second one, I think this restaurant, Como's gone, obviously. I know this one might still be in operation. It's the Tadish Grill in Frisco.
Oh, I love that place. Joe, I just went there. I went there a year ago. Yeah. That's where they put the bibs on you when you're eating the food.
You got it.
Yeah, right?
Correct.
And that's great. You know what I loved about that place? I'll give those guys so much credit. Food was great. But when you went in there, it was no reservations.
Yep.
And so I go in there, and I say it was packed. There were people everywhere. It's a great little place in downtown San Francisco.
You betcha.
And they go, it's about a 45-minute wait. And he goes, come back. He looks up at the clock on the wall, and he goes, come back at 8:22.
8:22.
And so, like, we hung around. I, like, had a drink or something. Came back, went to the bar across the street. Came at 8:22. He looked up at the clock. He goes, yeah, I'm back at the table. And he looks up. He's like, it's 8:20. Like, he's like, in 2 minutes, I'll seat you. And he did. He sat us at 8:22. I was
awesome.
Like, that's amazing. How can you do that?
Phenomenal. He's precise.
Yeah, I was so good at it. Anyway, swizzle sticks. Back to Tadish Grill. Love that place.
Two of them recently sold for $20. And I'm seeing singles for, you know, like $15. There aren't that many, but there's a handful for like $15.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm into...
Nothing phenomenal.
Yeah, I collect a lot of the, tiki Hawaiian swizzle sticks. I'm into that, so...
Gotcha.
Trader Vic's and stuff like that, so...
Can I sleep a third one here? Did you get anything for Como Inn or no?
I didn't get that. What was your third one?
This is probably nothing. But it's the Red Dog Saloon in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Wow.
Red
Dog Saloon, Red Dog, yeah.
I'm looking that up right now.
It's got a dancer with her skirt blown high and blah, blah, blah.
Can I ask you, Joe, and Greg will ask this too, but what is it about swizzle sticks? Just because they got the brand on there? I mean, are you talking about like swizzle sticks like that swizzle, like stir
drinks,
a drink?
Yeah,
they go in highballs. They used to call them highballs, okay, like tall glasses.
Right.
And they were almost essential because you didn't have too many of the barmaids or bartenders, I should say, shaking the drinks. So it's swizzle for a reason. You got to swizzle your own drink.
Yeah, the Red Dog is about $2 to $5, by the way.
Oh, I didn't think it was. I wouldn't think it'd be worth anything. So
yeah, and as far as for people who want to collect them, the more ornate ones are the ones you want. The kind that are just a stick with maybe just the writing on the side, not unless it is like Al Capone related or something. Then that's something. But yeah, the more ornate, the better.
Gotcha.
You know, I will say this, Joe, before I let you go, that I feel like you, me, and Greg get into a business where we go to these fancy cocktail bars, and we go, we can cut your time in half with your shaking and your moving and your messing around with the ice. It takes like 25 minutes until you can get a drink. If we just brought back swizzle sticks, that would go much faster. Everybody get their drink in an appropriate amount
of time. Let them do it themselves, yeah.
But if you go to a Hooters or someplace where they employ buxom women, that's half the battle. Shaking the cocktail. So you might lose the argument on that basis.
Maybe.
All right.
Well, thanks, Joe.
It was a thought.
You betcha. Right. Adios.
Adios. 312-981-7200. Got a lot of great stuff coming in here. Let's go to Chris. Chris, what do you want to brag about, Chris?
Well, I have got a chair that was purported to have been constructed, made around 1816. There's no maker marks on it whatsoever. And the seat is woven tree bark. And you can see very faded red paint on two of the back, back braces.
Now,
it's like
very,
that,
very, very
it's like
primitive.
That story, Shel Silverstein's story, The Giving Tree.
Like this
is like the end of that tree. Like, you can use me as a seat.
Right. And it's just amazing. I mean, how they how they wove the tree bark into the seat is just incredible. I have no idea how they did it, but it's a really cool piece.
That's cool. That's a cool piece to brag about. I don't know how, Greg, you find anything on that.
I'm finding just tree bark chairs, and even the newer ones are in the $200 to $400 range. Obviously, you've got the story, and it's going to be worth more than that, what you have.
And I actually have a provenance with it as well.
There
it was in a historical society down south.
Yeah, that's only going to help. Obviously, I'm not going to find anything from the late
1800s. I just love that there's a category called tree bark chair.
Yeah. It's a thing still, yeah. There's two of them on there.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you much.
Thanks for calling.
All right. We got a lot of great stuff coming in for the second half of the swap meet tonight. 312-981-7200. Get in line now. Text in. So we got some stuff to talk about coming up after the news. Greg Flamm is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter.
When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Or it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman.
And Greg Flamm.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. 312-981-7200. We are evaluating your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. Tonight on the program, Swap Meet every Wednesday night here. Brought to you by Wolf's Flea Market. 312-981-7200. We got a lot of great stuff. Let's go right to the phones. Let's go to Tim. Tim, what do you want to brag about, Tim?
Well, not bragging so much, but and I forgot it was your night. I'm losing track of everything because we're moving and hauling all this stuff out, my mother's stuff, whatever. But the first two things here are family album from WLS.
Okay.
It was a they had, and now you got to remember, my folks lived in central Wisconsin. So, I mean, this is going all over the world here, I guess. They're publications published by the Prairie Farmer, 1230 West Washington Boulevard, Chicago, copyright 33. It's got the whole, everybody that appears on WLS.
It's on the album.
People like Gene Autry, George Gobel.
Wow.
Like 30-some page.
So it's like the barn dance stuff, right?
Yeah, I saw
one. Yeah, one small section of it, yes, sir. And it's 33 and 34. And I think back in those days, my dad was hauling milk down to Chicago. And I think on a Friday or something, Mom would go along and they'd stop at some friends. There was a taxi cab driver, I remember him saying, change clothes, go to the Aragon all night, you know.
That's awesome.
And
nice.
Then go back
that's
to work
great.
In the morning.
That's so great, Tim. That's so great.
That's those, what we want,
know,
the story.
Those radio stations were heard, I mean,
yeah,
forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, you the Rocky can't. Mountains stopped. In my
yeah,
phone.
The mountains will stop the signal, but yeah. All right, so what do you got on that?
Greg? Well, the story, unfortunately, is worth more than the actual item in this case. I found one that recently sold for $10, but they might have, like, undervalued it since there aren't that many. Definitely do an auction on it. I think they sold themselves short and just
or hold
it
on
now.
To it and just
yeah, hold on to it, but the story,
story
is awesome, yeah. though.
Thanks, Tim.
And the 34, by the way, is a much classier book than the 33 for some reason.
Oh, okay. Wow. Right.
Good to know. Thanks, Tim.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you got, Mike? What do you want to brag about?
Yeah, I got that Walter Payton Doing It Right.
Right.
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Okay. Do you have the sleeve cover for it? Because I've had a few of those.
Yes, the sleeve that just has a painting.
A
bit,
yeah,
of
it's like a cartoonish type painting, caricature type painting.
What is it? What do you mean?
Okay, KFC released a promo called Doing It Right, and I think it was a Walter Payton written song. But what you find, sometimes you just find, it's a Flex record too, by the way, which is, I collect those.
Yeah,
like
right.
We have all different kind of Flex
those,
records.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's a Flex record, and it had like a just a folded type sleeve with the picture of Walter on the top. Or on the front, and they go for about $3 to $6. They're so common, though. There's literally a dozen of them on eBay right now.
But
okay,
what an awesome thing to have.
Klaus Weinstein Music Publishing Incorporated.
Right.
Okay.
Then it's got the kernel on the top of the record
right.
itself.
Yeah. Well, it's good you got the cover for it because at least
yeah.
if you are going to sell it, you'll get at least a higher price.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
What is this worth, you say?
Between $3 and $6, depending if it's got bends or dog ear type. Yeah, it's not worth a lot. You would think it'd be worth more.
Oh, I'll let my dog chew on it.
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. All right, have a good night.
That's awesome. Thank you.
All right, I got one for you. 708 says, and we did a little, okay. Let's see. I lost the original because then they sent some pictures. All right. This is Nikki from where is she saying? From Fort Worth. From Worth.
Worth, okay. Illinois, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was Fort Worth, but it was from Worth. I have a Darth Vader old-fashioned speakerphone. It's a full figure on a base with numbers as well as the landline connector with it, 1983. Ooh, yeah. That's like an Empire of the Strike. That could be Jedi.
Yeah, it's the full figure one.
It's full figured.
You know,
he's holding his belt in
right.
front.
Yeah,
a real strong look.
One recently sold though for $15.
What?
It might not be working. If that is working, if there's a way, you can still test to see if you get a dial tone, and it could be worth a little bit more. If you have the box, obviously it's going to be worth more. So that is something she needs to look into.
All right. I was hoping that'd be worth, just for my childhood alone, it'd be worth $250.
Right, and there's probably 3 or 4 different Darth Vader phones out there that I'm seeing.
All right, let's go to Josh. Josh, what do you want to brag about, Josh?
Hey, guys, I bought a building, an old building in a little farm town, and it's got a bunch of 20 by 20 tin tiles on the ceiling, and I believe they're from the 40s or 50s.
Right.
There's actually crown molding around it.
Wow.
That's made out of the same type of tin, and we're trying to figure out whether or not that's worth taking down because it's going to take some time and effort to get it down.
Yeah, if it's not going to be too hard to take them down, they are worth saving. You can get some money for them. I'm going to look up the general amounts, but I do see them, probably 2 or 3 vendors at Rosemont have those, and obviously they made them. They're made obviously every different way, you know. Some have like the circle crown, some, you know, are just square tiles, but they're selling them. Sure. So obviously someone's making money on them, so I'm trying to find what we're talking here.
They are painted. Do I take the time, you think, to get the paint off them before I sell them, or just sell them?
Probably not. You could probably just sell them as is and let whoever's gonna buy them decide if they want to do that or not.
Great. Thank
All
you
right.
So
awesome. Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. Okay. So 630. I feel like we saw this. I saw this one last week. I got all excited and we forgot to talk about it because it was right at the end. I got the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier.
Oh, yeah. I wrote
with
that down.
The box and all the pieces. Pretty big. Wondering if it's worth anything. Now you're speaking my language, 630. You're speaking my language because I'm always a big fan of the G.I. Joe from the 80s. The G.I. Joe that always shows up here in the swap meetings. I got the big doll from the 60s. I like the guys like Destro, Cobra Commander, maybe a Chameleon, Zartan. Wasn't there a Zartan?
Got me on
Come
that.
Come on, Greg. This is where you're supposed to go. Yeah, Zartan.
I was a
goes
big
through.
Gym guy growing up. So,
All right. So
I mean, I know the G.I. Joe stuff.
The G.I. Joe aircraft was a big deal because it was like one of those, like the biggest toy you could get. And it was like, and there were guys like Shipwreck. He had the parrot on his shoulder.
Yeah, the big one is the scuba one where he had like the whatever jetpack type thing, scuba.
Yeah,
thing
those are the big guys though.
Yeah.
This is the aircraft carrier is going to be more of the 80s guy.
Yeah,
right?
It's definitely big money, $200 to $500. I'm going to see what's recently sold for that. But yeah, big money, especially if the box for it, it's going to be huge. I mean, when you look this stuff up and you start seeing just the tiny little parts are going for $20, you'll know right away you've got
something,
you know, big.
Well, if you're not going to sell it, just invite us over to play with
right.
it.
Right.
Like, I know for a fact Pete and I would be there in a second.
Yeah, just
as long as you've got Snake Eyes.
Nice.
Wasn't Snake Eyes the ninja? Wasn't there a ninja guy? Yeah, Snake Eyes. He was like I think he was a good guy. Anyway, Destro's the bad guy. I'm just helping you out,
no,
Greg. When you
I'm
go to
learning.
The garage sales
I'm learning.
This
it's
weekend,
a learning moment for
and
me.
And you see a bunch of G.I. Joe guys there. You know, maybe maybe stop glossing over those.
Well,
and go
the
for
reason
them.
I gloss over is because they usually have them like overpriced. Just same thing like the 70s Kenner Star Wars figures. They're all overpriced, so I usually just walk past it.
Well,
and dig
the
for
number
something
one
else.
Guy is Duke. I think he was played by one of the Quaid brothers in the movie. Duke. He's like the good guy boss.
Okay.
And then the other side is Cobra. Seize him. That guy is the bad guy.
All right.
I'm just letting you know. Let's go to Susan's got toys as well. Susan, you sent in a picture as well of the Hot Wheels.
I did.
I have two Hot Wheels. They're both in the box. They were from my grandmother's when we cleaned out her house. And the back of the packages both say 1969 wow. Mattel. They've never been opened.
Wow, nice. Those are cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, open, they're like $20 or so and higher. I'm trying to find one that's still in the package like yours.
What I wouldn't do, Susan, is open it up and put them in your mouth. Because I'm guessing that's lead paint all over those things. That's just my guess.
I know. Right? And my son can't play with these, yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily.
Yeah, you've definitely got something because I'm not finding many or anything at all in the package still. So that's awesome. I mean, you might be in the 125, 150 to start and
what?
Do an auction, yeah.
150 bucks for those?
Because loose, they're going for like 50.
For each one?
Yeah,
or
each one. Like, each like one, yeah.
A $2 purchase, probably.
Yeah.
If that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
60s and 70s was the heyday. If you have any Hot Wheels with that, that's where it's at, especially if you have them in the box.
Way to go, Susan. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Bye. All right. We got a lot of calls on here, Greg. 312-981-7200. Why don't we do this? We'll take our last break of the night here, and we will come back. I got Patrick on the line, which looks awesome, Tim, Alex, and I got a million texts to get through.
All right.
Including a text that just said, Snake Eyes was the kick-ass ninja who was mute on the good side. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly right, Snake Eyes. I think he wore all white. Well, maybe that was the bad guy. There was a bad ninja and a good ninja, and they always fought each other.
Yeah.
I'm just helping you.
I'm learning.
You know, when you go out to the garage sales in McHenry this weekend,
you're right.
You're gonna be like, oh, a bunch of GI Joe guys. I should get these guys. They're probably and then you bring them home. You'd be like, oh, they're worth $2,500.
Right.
See, I was right. Yep. All right, swap meet. Stay with us.
Thanks.
All right, it's Download Swap Meet. Greg Flam at DuPage Picker here in studio 312-981-7200. We got a lot of stuff to get through. I'm going to go to Patrick to kick us off here. Patrick, what
do you
want to brag
about,
buddy?
Hey, how's it going tonight?
Oh, it's going great, man. How you doing?
Good, good, good. First of all, Snake Eyes was the black ninja. He was mute. Storm Shadow was the white ninja.
Storm
he was evil.
Shadow.
And Duke was played by, Storm Shadow. He was with Cobra. Duke was played by Channing Tatum. And Cobra Commander was Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I mean, before he became Cobra Commander, it was Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Okay, man. Wow. Thank you so much. You made my night.
Yep, awesome.
God. That was all information that I needed.
Download Nation.
Storm
comes
Shadow.
Through.
Best ever. Oh, and Shipwreck was right with the parrot on his shoulder, right?
I believe so. Yeah. I didn't really watch the cartoon so much myself in the 70s. I was more of a Voltron kind of guy.
There you go.
All right, what do you got?
Voltron, yeah. Okay, I don't know if these are worth anything. My grandmother had them. She used to get them at Union 76 back in the 70s. I think you filled up and they gave you one. They were NFL glasses, tumblers, and cocktail glasses. I've got the Chicago Bears. I got about seven of them.
Are they the gray tinted ones? Is that,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the rounded bottom.
Yeah. I still see those almost every other week. They're probably $4 to $8 a piece.
Okay.
Is what they're worth.
That's
and obviously, you know, you have to be careful shipping those.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm looking more. I keep them more because they were my grandmother. So,
Of
course, she's gone.
How many do you have?
I have seven of them.
Great.
We used to have the tall tumblers, but most of those got broken.
Yeah.
So these, I'm lucky that these seven stayed intact.
Yeah. With the rounded bottoms. Yeah. Those can.
Exactly.
Yep.
You know, those. Also, do you remember when 3M did a series of board games based on sports?
Not offhand. Which ones are you thinking?
I've got one called 3M Blue Line Hockey. It's a board game based on hockey. I have it. It's a 1973 version. Shrink wrap still intact, all pieces.
Wow.
And it's just never been opened.
Awesome, man. That's awesome.
Never been opened.
Wow.
It's done by 3M.
Yeah, there's quite a few on here, ranging from $10 to $40. I'm sure if it's still shrunk wrap, you're on the higher end, 40 plus.
Wow.
Make sure you do an auction if you do sell it.
There you go, Patrick. That's awesome, man.
All right, great.
Good stuff.
Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it. Yep.
Cool. Thanks.
You can watch Mitch Trubisky with those cocktail glasses.
Drink right.
Okay. Let's go to Tim. Tim, what do you want to brag about, Tim?
So, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to brag about it, but I've really been a big fan of, like, Columbia Exposition because it's a Chicago sort of thing, and especially the book.
Yeah.
And so I snagged a bunch of what looks like there's a week pass or like a weekly pass. Cause I sent a picture in through the text line.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys got that. And then I've got, individual tickets. I've got three of the presidents and an Indian. And then I have a couple of railway stubs and then I have a employee badge.
like someone's name on it.
For the Columbian Exposition.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Find passes.
I didn't get the pictures, by the way.
Yeah,
you probably sent it to the sports radio. They're right now going, someone just sent us a picture.
I know.
It didn't come through.
For me. The red and green tickets are like a bunch of three of them are going for anywhere from $15 to $35. A pass looks like they took a best offer. They asked 150 and took best offer, so it could be 75 or 100. So there's
that.
Yeah, so that's cool.
All right, awesome. Thanks, Tim.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Alex. Alex, what do you got, Alex? What do you want to brag about?
It's my great-great-grandfather's rocking chair. It's a turn-of-the-century piece here. It's a Stickley brand product.
Stickley.
I was able to contact the museum, but they couldn't give me any sort of value on it, not that I'd want to sell it. But they sent me some information here as well that I could tell you about that might help us out here.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you're looking about $500 to $700. Let me do some more searching here.
$500 to $700?
Yeah.
Wow. Rocking chairs. I'm in the wrong business.
Mm-hmm.
Should get into rocking chairs.
Yeah, furniture is huge. If I had the space, I'd be into furniture and bikes. but don't have the room.
All right. Thanks, but Alex.
Yeah, one for 700 plus. So that's
700 plus.
Yeah.
Take it. There you go.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is, man.
Yep. Good luck.
You could open up your own high-end, like Andersonville, cool antique shop, mm-hmm. right, and make that one the centerpiece. And this is funny, like Tim's stuff just came through at the exposition. It's just late. But you could put that scent, like that would be the piece and just say,
overprice it by double.
You could double it.
Yeah.
414 says, tell Susan those were called Hot Wheel Blister Packs.
Blister Packs.
First one, 67, 68, 69. Very rare, $300 mm-hmm. and up. Although yeah,
I couldn't find one in the blister pack. So
I'm not
just
even sure
loose.
If it's, yeah. 708, I have Billy Blastoff
mm-hmm.
from the 60s. Both construction worker and astronaut with box plus many individual pieces.
Okay, individual pieces that, yeah. If you had them, like each one in its own box, it'd be $200 to $400 each one.
Wow.
But loose now, you know, you got to do some research and it's probably $40, $50 maybe. But some of those pieces, like I said, you know, you can get $15, $20 just for a boot, G.I. Joe boot or something. You know.
309 says he have the pitcher Yard of baseball from the 1906 Cubs World Series team. Players across the bottom in complete uniform and names, Wrigley Field in the middle. My great uncle gave it to me 20 years ago, and before that he had it in his tavern since it was released. Yes, that's awesome.
Mm. Yeah, not finding that. Obviously, it sounds rare.
That's cool. I like mm-hmm. that. I liked a lot. 847 says Revolutionary War bayonet.
Yeah, I had
what
that.
Do you think? that's all I got.
I mean, generally, you know, 150, 200 and plus, depending condition and things like that. But yeah, it's war memorabilia.
This weekend, they had The Patriot on one of the stations, mm-hmm. the Mel Gibson movie. And then they had Independence Day.
I saw that.
On E, right?
Yeah, I caught.
And I don't know the actor's name, but there's an actor, a character actor, who plays like a lieutenant in the Redcoat Army in The Patriot. And then he's also like a soldier who's like fourth in command in the Independence Day movie, like by the president. I just thought that was cool. I'm like, 4th of July is big for this guy.
Yeah, I, yeah, double duty.
Yeah. I have an original 3-foot Bozo head carpet.
Yeah, that I didn't
815,
get
a Bozo head carpet, 3-foot, original, no knockoff.
Yeah, pulling that up here.
Bozo head. I'm pulling up the Bozo head carpet. Doesn't show up.
Yeah, it's not coming up. No, none here. All so right. that you yes, know, that's a good sign.
224. Hey, guys, this is Ken with the World War II generators. I couldn't talk much because I was being pulled over by the police.
That is awesome.
I was pulled over to the side of the road while talking to you. All went well. No ticket.
Awesome. Good job.
Oh, sir, I've got some World War II generators. I was just trying to call the radio station. I'm sorry I was on my phone.
That is awesome.
Okay, well, just be careful.
Hands free, Ken.
all right, keep going here. I got a buggy, a Pram, P-R-A-M, mm-hmm. Pedigree 61 Victor baby carriage. Ooh, it looks like, it's old school. They sent pictures. It looks like the baby carriage at the beginning of Ghostbusters 2. You remember that when the Sigourney Weaver's going and then the bubbling stuff comes up and it pushes the carriage to the middle of the street. Remember that?
Yep. My mind was on Rosemary's Baby for some reason. But
it's the beginning of Ghostbusters 2. Classic.
No,
classic.
That's a good find. It's 180 plus, you know, for that, depending on condition, of course.
Really?
All right. Yep, 1961.
All right. Let's see. As they spend over itself for thousands. No. All right, here we go. 815 says, hey, guys, I have a Beanie Baby given away at Cubs games with ticket.
Okay.
I mean, if you're doing a Cubs Beanie Baby.
Yeah, let's see what those are going for. It's our annual Beanie Baby.
I know. There's always got to be one, right?
Yep. It's all right.
Yeah.
Cubs Beanie Baby. Starting at $6 and up, and there's looks like about five or so currently on there.
All right. I guess that's okay, right?
Yeah.
For Beanie Babies.
Some have sold. One sold for $36, so hey.
You'll take it because you got that for free, right?
That's a few
beers.
That's
how it usually goes. Greg Flam joins us every week here on The Download to do Swap Meet on Wednesday nights. A great night again tonight. So this is a big weekend for garage sales. So you're going to be out at Wolf's?
I'll be at Wolf's. I'm there almost every Sunday. And, yeah, garage sales tomorrow, estate sales all week. So you'll see me around, That's what I do.
All right, Greg Flam, good to see you, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for The Download tonight here on 720 WGN. Patty Vasquez coming up next tomorrow on the program. Casey Nicholaw is going to join us, the Broadway director-choreographer who did the Broadway play Something Rotten, which is coming to Broadway in Chicago right here at the Oriental starting, I think, next week. Not only did he do that, but he did Book of Mormon with Trey Parker. He did the choreography for Spamalot. He did Aladdin. He has won 6 Tony Awards for his work.
He's a monster.
He is, he directed the show, the touring show, Something Rotten, that's coming through. So he's going to join us. He's currently, I believe he's currently in London, as he's got like 5 shows up on stage in London. Talk about a talented guy. So he will join us tomorrow night on The Download to talk about his career, but also about Broadway musicals here in the area.